Joe Rogan Experience podcast is brought to you by The Fleshlight. If you go to joerogan.net, click on the link for The Fleshlight, and enter in the code name Rogan, you will get 15% off the number one sex toy for men.
Nice.
This is a wonky-ass setup. I can never get these fucking cameras to stay straight.
Hi.
There you go, fella. Fleshlight commercial done. That's it? No. I'll give you a little more. It's a fucking great product.
Yeah.
It's an embarrassing product, but it's excellent. It's very effective for what it does.
Oh, these things are going to be on the space station soon. I bet $100.
They should be on the space station. Why should they make those people just stay up in space and not be able to fuck a little?
Not to mention, like, jerking off in space.
Yeah, aren't they, like, strictly prohibited from having sex up there?
Well, yeah, because you're going to have your cum floating through the space station. This is why the Fleshlight's great up there, because it catches your jizz.
That's right.
It's perfect for the space station.
It's American. It's NASA.
It's fucking NASA. Well, I mean, the
it is NASA-type technology.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the best feeling false vagina you can get. Yeah. Or I shouldn't even say false. Artificial.
Why wouldn't you say false?
Why wouldn't I? Because it makes me feel bad.
I'm
judging it.
Artificial is better for you.
Artificial is better. It's not false. It's a real fake one.
It definitely feels like you're fucking a pussy.
A really good one, too.
And a dead one.
Especially if you go out of your way. Well, you can make it warm.
Yeah, but you don't...
I don't do that.
Anytime I'm about to fuck a Fleshlight, I'm way past heating up the thing.
Yeah, how often do you prepare and actually, like, lay
Never.
Out some water?
Have some wine with it?
Heat a bath. Put the Fleshlight in the bath so it soaks in the warm, warm water. You'd have to figure out what's realistic. Is 100 degrees realistic? Are you fucking a girl with a fever?
Oh, yeah. By the way, a marathon runner, a girl mid-marathon. But I did it once. I did try to heat up the Fleshlight. I was like, I'm going to fucking... I put it under the sink and turned the water on hot and just let the hot water
run
through it. And then I felt it, and it's the same thing. I'm like, fuck this. I'm fucking this thing.
It's not warm. Yeah, you have to poach it slightly. Like, what temperature? What if you had, like a crazy fetish for banging a chick that's dying of fever, and the one last thing she wants is you to fuck her?
Malaria chick.
She's just so hot and sweaty, and she's just shaking, and last gasps of air, and her favorite thing is fucking, so she's like, just fuck me.
Yeah, and you would fly to villages in Africa that were, like, afflicted with malaria, and you would go there and pay the villagers money to let them fuck.
You know, it's fucked up. As fucked up as that thought is, you know someone out there has it. Legitimately. You know, there's 7 billion of us now. How many people are there?
I don't know. I lost count.
We're also brought to you by Onnit.com. O-N-N-I-T, makers of Alpha Brain. I didn't take my Alpha Brain before the show. Let's see if I fall apart. I take it before anything important. What is it? It's a nootropic. I take it every day, essentially, but I make sure I take it. Like, before I do the UFC, I take 3 or 4 of them. Before I do comedy, I take 3 or 4 of them. Usually, I only take, like, 2 in a day, maybe 4. But what it is nootropics are, and by the way, this is just me. I mean, it's not dangerous. None of these levels are dangerous, but you might not like it. You might think it makes you too jittery. Like, I've had, like, I've taken 3 before in a row, and I'm like, man, this makes me feel like a little edgy, almost like I'm caffeined out a little bit. But usually, 2 is good. 2 is good for stand up. 2 is good for, you know, anything. Anything intense is going to take more than 4 or 5 hours. I'll usually take 3 nowadays.
They also seem to combat hangovers.
It's great for jet lag too. Well, whatever the fuck's going on in your brain when it's not working that well, obviously there's a lack of something. What is that? I don't know. But these nutrients, supposedly the science behind it is that it helps your body produce human neurotransmitters, and it helps you produce all the shit that makes your brain fire.
Yeah. It's, what's that stuff called? It's called, doesn't it have, it's the shit you take after you take ecstasy the next day.
Oh, yeah, 5-HTP.
That
is a nootropic, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's in what's the thing we have called New Mood. 5-HTP and also L-tryptophan, because L-tryptophan converts to 5-HTP in the body. And that enhances your body's ability to produce serotonin. Yeah, there's ways you can manipulate the levels of nutrients in your body, and it has an effect, a real effect, on the way your brain works.
Right.
But don't just listen to me. please Google nootropics, and there's a lot of other companies out there that have real good products. I mentioned Bill Romanowski's Neuro One. I like that one a lot, and it's got like a little caffeine in it.
I've just released my own.
Really?
Yeah.
What's it called?
Beta Brain.
The mind of a guy who jerks off all day and shirks his responsibilities.
It makes it so that you can easily shirk your responsibilities without feeling guilty. Like, before, I would play World of Warcraft for like 4 hours straight and I'd feel terrible. Now on Beta Brain, I can play World of Warcraft for 2 days straight. Shit myself, piss myself, no shred of guilt. It's great stuff, guys.
So you compartmentalize, essentially.
Yeah, you just don't feel the guilt.
Right, you just let it go. The guilt just gets blocked.
Guilt's gone, long naps. You could jerk off 5 times a day without feeling like a loser on Beta Brain.
Well,
Beta Brain, check it out.
We'll be looking into that as well. If you're interested in Alpha Brain, go to JoeRogan.net, click on the link, enter in the code name Rogan, and you will get 10% off any and all orders. We're absolutely not trying to rip anybody off with any of this stuff, and that's the reason why we have a 100% money-back guarantee on the first order of 30 pills. When you buy it, if you like it, you don't even have to send it back. Just say, this stuff sucks, give me my money back. We are not trying to rip anybody off. This is all stuff I would be taking whether or not I had any financial stake in the company.
With Beta Brain, I have no financial stake in the company. And with the first 50 pills you order, you get a lavender-scented face mask for your naps.
It should be with Beta Brain for the first 3 years of the company. All the money goes to all of your exes anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if that was the way the world worked? If you entered into contracts and as you left, like, you would have to agree to be with this woman or pay for this woman for 10 years.
What if it was?
And then they'll have sex with you.
What if it was just with friendship? What if you had to get married to your friend? Like, after a certain amount of time being friends with people, you had to, like, sign a contract that's like, we're going to be friends forever.
Yeah, and you can't just miss them on a weekend once or twice. You got to be with them constantly.
No, and if you fucking break that contract, you got to give your friend, like, 10% of your income.
I bet people have done. I mean, isn't that what gay marriage is, essentially? It's just friends that fuck each other because they're dudes, right?
I mean, that's what marriage is.
Right, yeah,
friends
exactly.
Friends that fuck each other.
Exactly.
That's what having a girlfriend is. It's a friend that you fuck.
Right.
It's a girlfriend. That's what they call it. It's just a friend that you like to put your dick inside of. That's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But somehow that act of doing that, the moment you put your cock inside somebody...
Changes the game.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah, it gets so emotional, Duncan.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that Alpha Brain talk. That commercial is essentially over right now. Well, there's New Mood, Trim Tech Sport, Trim Tech Immune, and Alpha Brain, all the different things that we sell it on at onnit.com. Coming up, we got kettlebells and a bunch of other cool nutritional things.
You know, Beta Brain also has a mood-enhancing drug. It's called Blue Mood. It makes it so that you can, like, really listen to Elliott Smith and fucking love it.
I wonder if someone could sell pills that made you depressed. People would buy them. People would buy them. I mean, look at what cigarettes are. Cigarettes are something that makes you feel like shit and smell terrible. And yet, they're like, it's super popular. It kills people, and then it's super popular. If you had depression pills and you just had them out there,
yeah,
it would be like a news story. News at 5. Is this new pill crossing the line? It's marketed as depression. And then you go there, and there's a chick with white makeup on and black lipstick, and she goes, life fucking sucks. It's always fucking sucked, okay? And when I take these pills, I see reality, and that's what I want. If you don't like it, fuck you.
Yeah.
What is wrong with the children of today? And is this depression drug crossing the line?
Happiness is annoying. When you're around happy people, they're fucking irritating.
If you're happy, you're a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah. What's there to be happy about? You're gonna fucking die in a few
years. Depression.
Wars raging everywhere. You're really gonna walk around with a smile on your face in this economy?
Well, you know, it's really good to do depression with your girl. Because when you get through it and it wears off, it's like you get to really appreciate how good you have it.
Right.
When you're getting along great.
Yeah.
Because when you take depression, it's really like going through like one of those life-changing experiences on weird African drugs that make you like almost die. Sure. You know, they have a bunch of those crazy drugs that they give, like jungle drugs, where you almost die. It's not quite a psychedelic experience. It's almost like a near-death experience. Like, they literally almost kill you.
Pretty cool.
And you're supposed to, like, learn something about yourself through this intense and horrible poisoning. I think that they're called ordeal poisons. That's the actual technical term. And they operate very similar to psychedelics in the way that they humble you. I mean, because it really brings you to the brink of death, and your emotions are just blaring, your fears are blaring, your insecurities, and when I think you're forced to examine your life in a very deep and realistic way in any real, true, near tragic situation, right?
Oh yeah.
So I think you take these ordeal poisons and you just go through the ordeal of almost fucking dying, and you learn a little bit about yourself.
Sure.
But God damn it, that's the hard way to do it.
That is the hard way to do it, but for a lot of people, that's the only way to do it.
Yeah, they don't have enough. They live in a psychedelic-free environment. They can't get it to them. So they don't have the means to get it to them.
Yeah, and sometimes even, people will take psychedelics and still
be douchebags.
Be douchebags.
Totally. So, you know, that guy we were talking about before the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot of them out there. They're like, it's almost like by taking it, it allows you to be a twat. Because you've had the experience and you're allowed to, like, stick it in someone else's face that hasn't had the experience. Right. They're children or they're a moron. Like, that's crazy.
Well, then,
you're not better for having an experience. You're just more experienced. You know, what's better is your overall impact on human beings. And if just you've accumulated some extra information so you feel it's okay to be cunty, well, that's not better at all. You just moved your energy into a different direction. You're not better.
Right.
You're still being a twat.
Well, you're still differentiating.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. That's the in the Bhagavad Gita, it sort of talks about, like, signs of people who've gained real realization. And one of the signs is that they don't differentiate between anything. It's all, they see it as all an expansion of the same original force. They don't see it anymore as, like, this person's rich, this is person's poor, this person's good, this person's bad. It's all just different sides and angles of this superstructure that has existed forever.
That's so hard to think that way. It's so hard to separate yourself from, from you and your needs and your ideas of you, what you want, what you want to accomplish, or whatever, whatever you associate with you, and the idea that you're a part of a whole.
Well, you can intellectually imagine it, but really being in that state, the only time I've ever truly been in that state was when I had taken a huge dose of LSD and was out in the desert, and I remember just having that fading away, merging thing where you no longer anything. You're everything. You just merge into it all. And I don't know how you would really function in that state. I don't really know what you would be like in the world if that lasted longer than the amount of time, an acid trip is, or a few hours. But they do say that through meditation and through strict yogic disciplines, you can hit that place permanently, and somehow that place is nirvana or paradise. It's a beautiful way to be all the time. But I don't know. I've only heard stories about people like that. Descriptions of people like, he was a corpse that the universe spoke through. Is one great description of,
wow,
where the ego of the person was dead. They're just gone.
But that guy would probably be boring as fuck to hang out with. That's the problem.
Right.
part of what's cool about being a human being is being around people that have some flavor.
Yeah, hell yeah. And you see some of these people and they do seem to have flavor. So, I don't know. The problem with talking about the holy men of the world, the great holy men of the world, is that I've never met one. It's like all
I've met some wannabe gurus. Quite a few wannabe gurus,
yeah.
And some of them, they shock me with their humorlessness.
You know what though, dude? I did do a video chat with Ram Dass.
Yeah, you said that was amazing.
And that guy was fucking awesome, and it lit up my whole apartment.
And it was just you and him?
Yeah, it was me, him, and Natasha.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did you arrange this?
Well, on his website, you can still do it. It's this thing called Heart to Hearts, where you can, you could talk to him on Sunday.
Wow.
And you just go to the website and sign up. I couldn't believe it either. I thought it was there was no way it was going to work, or I thought they were going to, like, try to get ask for money from me or something, right. But I signed up for it. Sunday, my phone rang, hello? Duncan, it's Ramdas.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and then suddenly I'm, like, on this video screen with Ramdas, and he was glowing. He was, like, he's an old dude now, but it was, like, exactly the same energy that my friend's 8-year-old kids have. It was just this radiant, childlike, authentic energy. It wasn't phony. It wasn't bullshit.
Wow.
We talked for a little while. He told me this chant that he's been doing lately over and over again where he says, I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. It's a chant to just sort of, I don't know, shift your vibe. And then that was it. Said goodbye. And that was it. They didn't ask for any money. They didn't want anything. It was just a
wow.
You know, yeah, it was just like service. That's what it's.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah, it's like when you look at him and, you know, people who are psychedelic enthusiasts, you know, you look at someone like him and you go, there's a guy, he made it through.
Yes.
He made it through. He really grabbed it.
Yeah.
He really grabbed the whole thing, and it made him something different. It made him what he is at the heart of the trip.
That's right, man. Well, because what happened is he went into that state. And instead of going into that state and leaving and then that's it was a novel experience, he went into that state and said, I want to be in this state permanently. What the fuck is this? Because he had, you know, he's a trained psychologist, and he's like, we don't know what this is. We don't have any maps for this. We don't know what the fuck this psychedelic experience is at all. So he was trying to, when he went to India, he was trying to see if this was a state that you could permanently reside in. He wanted to stay high forever. That's how much he loved tripping. You know, when I come down quite often, I'm like, thank you, God. I'm back to, you know, state zero ground. I'm here. Right. I've got... He was like, okay, let's do this forever. They were fucking...
Wow.
Him and Timothy Leary were, like, drinking from what I... Ooh. Drinking, sipping vials of acid, sipping from LSD. You know, they were going so fucking deep into the experience. Ooh. I know, dude.
It's so scary.
Fearless, intrepid explorers. But he, you know, he realized that you go into that place, you have this contact, or whatever you want to call it, with some kind of either hidden interior realm or some kind of exterior realm that, as humans, our perceptual mechanism.
Yeah, and then that's a pretty scientific way of looking at it, realistically. Hidden interior realm, yeah. Even being just a conscious one. You know, a consciousness realm. You know, right. The fact that those ideas, why are they not available to me right now? This is, if it's all being generated interiorly.
Yeah.
How come those ideas are not available to me right now? Do I need some intense stimulation of different regions in order to give me that information? Like, I don't know how the process works. I'm not exactly sure if other people know either. I have the weirdest fucking feeling that when you take psychedelics, or when you take even marijuana, that you're part of what the experience is you experiencing the intelligence of a plant. Part of it is it boosts up your own senses into this weird, crazy alien state, and that's why being high feels so like disorienting and feels odd. Right. You're almost like not in your space anymore. Right. Your space is connected with some other intelligence, and this other intelligence is showing you different avenues of thinking. It's almost like it starts filling pores in your mind and pushing you in a certain direction. And then, until it wears off. And then it wears off and it's alien to your system, so your body gets rid of it eventually, and then it's gone. It only has a certain amount of love time inside
right.
of you.
Right.
But while it's inside of you, it's like it's changing you. It's making you like super fucking sensitive. It's making you super aware and honest. You know, I mean, when a lot of people say, well, it doesn't do that to me, man, it just makes me paranoid. Well, maybe that's just how you deal with stress.
Right.
You know, because for sure you're going to get moments if you smoke too much pot where you feel paranoid. There's no getting away with that. Everyone's going to have that experience. But what is that really? Well, I'll tell you what it is, man. It's like you're being aware of all the shit in the world all at once. And all the shit that you're hiding in the back of your head, and all the shit that's the your worst nightmare that you're terrified that you're actually manifesting because you think about it all the time.
Yeah.
And when you smoke pot, all that shit comes to life. And on top of that, you're just disoriented. It's like surfing. It's like surfing can be great. Surfing can be like, I watch those guys when they look like they're having a great fucking time, and I go, God damn, surfing looks like fun.
Yeah.
But you know when surfing doesn't look like fun? When that wave comes over your fucking head and smashes you into the rocks and pulverizes your bones with a million pounds of pressure, and you can't get to the surface. Well, that's surfing too.
Yeah, psychedelics will definitely roll your ass.
Oh,
you don't know what you're fucking doing.
Especially you if you fight it. You try to fight it.
The worst.
Yeah. There's people that are fighting reality every day, and they often have like a sort of a fake map of the world that they've devised in their head, and that's how they navigate. They navigate through this fake map of the world. But a lot of the little segments in their mind that they have associated with certain things and details, and a lot of it is delusional because you're trying to protect yourself from your own failures, you know what I mean? Like, especially with men, I think, you know, guys have these fucked up egos that are designed to make sure that you have a will to survive when a cheetah attacks or fight off another tribe so that your DNA stays intact. Well, that will is a fucking creepy thing just running around through your veins. So,
yeah. What we're talking about here is what they called set and setting, which is like when you're going to take a psychedelic, what's your mind state? What's your emotional state when you take the psychedelic? And if you go back to the idea that, what's his name? John Mark Allegro? What's his name?
Yeah, John Marco Allegro.
Yeah, John Marco Allegro talking about how early Christianity was a mushroom cult.
Mm.
And you go back and you look at the idea of when you're going to take communion or when you go to pray or when you go to the sacred place, you're supposed to forgive your brothers and your sisters because... But so the idea is, before you go into a psychedelic state, you need to, as much as you can, work out the shit that you're avoiding. Because when you go into that psychedelic state, anything that you're trying to skip around, any of those aspects of your personality that need to be leveled or need to be balanced are going to spring out at you in a million different ways that are really intense. And if you're not prepared for that, then you'll have the bad trip. And the bad trip is you hallucinate. You can see crazy shit. You look in the walls and see skulls. Why are you seeing skulls? You know, why are you seeing bubbling skulls in the wall? Well, you're seeing bubbling skulls because that's what you're projecting from inside of you because you're fucking scared of death. You're scared to die. You're terrified of letting go. Your body doesn't want to die. And until you deal with that initial thing, then all these other neuroses will spring up after that. You know, your avoidance of reality, all the different weird ways that you're trying to avoid reality, which is essentially just trying to avoid coming to the ground, to the terrain that you're on. And the terrain that we're all on is fucking intense. We're on a terrain where we are going to go extinct. And, you know, who knows, depending on how old you are, you know, but depending on how much technology advances, between like 70 and 10 years, 2 years, 1 year, that's an intense realm to exist on.
You know, there's a there's a situation right now in Fukushima, you know, the whole thing with the fourth reactor, where they're terrified that if any seismic event occurred, like there is a zero chance of surviving a seismic event,
right,
and that they would have another blown reactor. And we were talking about it on the podcast, and someone made a clip of it and put it on this website where it's like, and people are like discussing this, like this is a serious issue. One of the things that I was saying was that we're going to have spots in this world because of nuclear power where for hundreds of thousands of years, it's going to be dead.
Wastelands.
Yeah, dead.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of them, and there's a bunch more plants out there that could make a bunch more spots dead.
Like, yeah.
And this has just been less than 100 years we've been doing this. We've already got three giant spots where you can't go to anymore.
Yeah, and have you seen, like, the places where they store the nuclear rods? They, like, have special places, like caves and
stuff
that they put it in. And I believe that they've, on the signs around the place, they actually have, like, skulls and shit. They have things.
Yeah.
So in case society collapses.
Uh-huh.
And everyone forgets, and thousands of years pass, you go wandering up to that place, and there's this fucking skull, and you just recognize, okay, this is a cursed place.
This is nuclear power is one of the dumbest, most brilliant ideas ever. It's so dumb and so brilliant at the same time.
Humans have a lot of hubris, you know?
That's, yeah. This is a ridiculous one, though. I mean, we're fucking with something that there is no technology to clean it.
Yeah.
There's no technology to turn it into anything other than toxic, lethal, horrible, killing shit.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It's like the
it's ridiculous.
The exuberance of when that stuff initially came out and people thought that they discovered endless fuel sources, that exuberance like was everywhere. It seemed like it really seemed like the most beautiful. It seemed like we were entering into utopia, I think, for a while.
But it's you know, the joke I was doing in my act about it was that, did anybody ask them, like, what happens when the power goes off? Somebody was like, dude, you're being negative.
Right.
Like, there had to be, like, some sort of a stupid argument where no one considered the possibility that the power could go off. You could lose both backup generators. You have no other way of fixing this. You just built a sun. You built a little tiny sun, and you're just going to leave it there. Like, that's insane.
Well, yeah, I mean...
And you can't cool it off.
You can't cool it off. You can't. It's a demon. You've summoned a demon that you can't send back.
That is a demon. It is. It really, truly is. Like, you have summoned a demon when you have nuclear power. If you really stop and think about that, if a demon existed and in his very presence, he was poisoning the environment, no plants could grow. I mean, that is a demon by definition. Anyone that gets near him dies a horrible, twisted death. That's a demon.
Yeah. This is something people don't understand with, like, occult talk, where people talk about demons, like summoning demons and summoning spirits. They take that shit literally. So they hear someone saying, I'll invoke these things to summon a demon. And so then a lot of great movies have been made after that, the literal interpretation of that. But every fucking day, man, not just on the grand scale with us summoning nuclear power, but in little ways, people fucking summon demons into their life all the time with no thought of how to get rid of it.
Mm.
Every time, you know, like when people shoot heroin? That's summoning a fucking demon.
Yeah.
Like, you've been told by every single other, like, necromancer who summoned that demon, that shit will fuck you up. But people who do heroin, and they always start off with, like, you know what, I'm just going to do it once. Just want to see what it feels like. Everyone does that, and then you fucking end up under a fucking bridge with three cocks in your mouth. You know what I mean? All from summoning this one stupid fucking demon that has just destroyed so many people. And heroin, demon's a great word for heroin because it offers you something. Because so many people, they say, oh yeah, fucking Jimi Hendrix, love this stuff. Or Elliot Smith, listen how beautiful his music is. You can go on and on about the people who shot heroin and, like, made beautiful stuff. So there is an exchange. I mean, doesn't that kind of tickle around in your head? Lenny Bruce was blasting the shit. You know? Doesn't it kind of tickle around? You're like, what the...
What is that?
Maybe there is a little land... Like, you rise up and see this landscape that you can't see from the psychedelic perspective.
Maybe. It doesn't seem to be worth it, whatever it is. All I look at is, like, what makes you happy. And I don't see people taking heroin and getting super happy from it. Everyone that I've ever known that did heroin, the come down from it was unbelievably bad. Like, bone jarring. Yeah. They would say your bones would ache. Ugh. That's how they would describe it.
Terrible drug. You never see any, like, marathon runners who are, like, shooting
heroin. I had a friend who, he was a good buddy of mine that lived in New York, and he came to visit me. And I didn't know when he was coming to visit me that he was trying to kick heroin. And that he was going to do is just come and hang out with me at my house in California and kick heroin with me. So I did not know. I didn't know how bad he had it. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. So he flew out and the dude was just in bed sick for like 6-7 days. He couldn't go anywhere, man. I would get him food and shit and he couldn't go anywhere. He came with me to work one day. I was on news radio. He came and just sat around the set. But he couldn't move around, man. The dude was he was jacked.
It's amazing to see that, isn't it? It's amazing to see the traps that we set for ourselves in the world that are completely avoidable. But for some reason, we always set these traps. And then they smash on us and we go through this awful period. And then if you're lucky, you get out on the other side. That kind of goes back to what you were talking about, this idea of, like, having that near-death experience or having this awful catastrophe happen in your life, if you handle it the right way, you can become a million times stronger and better from that catastrophe. People don't realize that, so they're always putting off what could essentially be the thing that makes them happier than they've ever been in their life.
That's kind of a weird way of looking at it. I mean, you could possibly be happy because of a catastrophe, or it could be horrible. You could lose someone you love. You know, I don't think all catastrophes will necessarily lead to great
Not all.
Great revelations. But I think occasionally it can give you an enhanced perspective. Something that happens to you. I mean, the most interesting people that we all know are people that have gone through a lot of shit in their life. You know, a lot of crazy experiences. You know, and the having to overcome terrible things and places is sort of what makes them exceptional.
That's right, man. But there's a certain group of people who like to live pretending that catastrophes will never happen to them.
Right.
This is a ridiculous way to live.
The people that are overweight, smoking every day. Yes. And I have a friend who he's like 60, and he smokes 2 packs a day, and he'll tell you, like, he's always like making excuses, like, they've even said now that it's all either you have the gene or you do not. So there's a lot of people that will smoke cigarettes and never. I've been smoking cigarettes for 40 years. I don't have the gene or I don't have cancer. I went to the doctor. My doctor says, you look great. The doctor's looking at you and he's like, you smoke how much a day? And you're like, 2 packs. And he's like, you look great. Get the fuck out of here. What is he going to do to someone who's fucking intentionally poisoning themselves all day? You're intentionally poisoning yourself all day. Not even one pack, you glutton nicotine vampire. 2 packs a day, all day. Of course your doctor's going to tell you you look great. You look great. Get the fuck out of here. I'm going to see you soon, though, bitch. You're going to be back soon. You're going to be back for some crazy shit. I'm calling my uncle up right now. My uncle's an oncologist, and we got our eye on you.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. I never thought of what a moneymaker smokers are for doctors.
Well, of course. If you're a doctor, you want your people. Well, if you're a real doctor, I mean, it's obviously people that don't operate for money. You know, they operate because they love being an excellent surgeon or an excellent doctor. And, you know, we're not disparaging the medical profession at all.
Of course not.
But if you were like some money grubbing crazy doctor. But there are a few of those out there, right?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, there's every now and then there is some money grubbing, like Michael Jackson's doctor.
Dude,
that fucking crazy guy.
I'll show you, man. I've got fucking fillings in my mouth that don't need to be there because my dentist, as it turns out, was giving unnecessary fillings to people.
Oh my god!
So I've got fucking.
What a monster!
When I was a kid, I naturally was always getting cavities.
Oh my god!
You know what I mean? I was always getting.
What a monster!
I was getting blasted with fucking lead.
This guy's ruining kids' teeth, drilling into kids' teeth, and making money. I hope he's in jail. Is he in jail?
I don't know what happened to him when that scandal hit.
That's not just fraud. I will beat the fuck out of you. Drill holes in my kid's head that didn't need to be there.
Yeah, right.
Because you're trying to make money.
Like that fucking judge.
Oh my god, I would want to beat the fuck out of that dentist.
Wouldn't it be great to mash his fucking head? Why?
Could you imagine anybody that would do that to a little kid?
Yeah.
Just to make some money?
Sure. That's a big. This is something that. This is a facet of reality.
That's so scary.
I can't imagine. Like, what mind state do you have to be in? Especially you're a fucking dentist. You're already making great money. Like, why do you need the extra cavity dough?
Exactly. What? I mean, how? Oh, Jesus Christ. How can you justify that? That would make... I would never sleep. I would have to find that guy in prison. I might get arrested so I can go to prison with him and find out what prison he's at.
He's fucking underground by now. That guy.
I mean, if it was my kid, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I would want to get arrested and put in a cell near him. Just so I could beat the fuck out of him after he got arrested.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of...
I just wouldn't be able to deal with it. Some guy drilling into your baby's head to try to make himself some extra scratch.
Yeah.
Because he likes to get a big shot at a restaurant and buy a nice bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Is that what's going on?
Sure. You
fucking asshole.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, man. But think of it. The thing to me is, like, there's a lot of people out there who live like that.
Sure. There's a lot of people out there that are sociopaths. I mean, you've seen the studies. There's been, you know, I believe it was Time Magazine or someone recently had some article about a new book that's out. It was something like 1 in 100. 1 in 100 people are just fucking sociopaths.
Remember the guy who recently went rampaging through that kids' camp? Was it in, where was it? Norway? Was it Norway?
Yes. Yeah, I think Norway, yeah.
Norway. He went rampaging through that camp, just killing fucking kids.
Yeah.
And over there, they're not like the United States. They don't have a death penalty. So, like, they're giving this guy a fair trial, and they made a big show of the fact that we're going to do this. There's not going to be some kind of crazy, visceral response to this. And so, in the trial, the guy apparently is going into a detailed account of how he went walking through this camp and shot kids who were hiding from him and shot kids and how they tried to run and how he found some of them by thinking where he would hide if he was one of these kids. And he's enjoying it. He's getting off on it because he's a sociopath. It feels good for him to tell the story. So in these situations, sometimes I think, has pacifism gone too far in this situation? The guy clearly shot a bunch of kids. The guy, why do we need to discover if his true motivation or what his real crime was? We know what the crime was. There's a bunch of dead kids because this guy went rampaging through. Sometimes, don't you think you can go too far on the side of...
100%.
Yeah, why...
Well, yeah, well, look at the Dalai Lama, man. Dalai Lama seems like a great guy, but he's never gotten a blowjob in his life. That's a stupid way to live.
We don't know that.
He says he doesn't have sex.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. Well, says he doesn't have relations. He says it like he sees a woman he's attracted to her, but he realizes it's too much work. It's just, you know, he laughs about it. That's silly. That's silly. You're missing out on a big chunk of life.
I think he's humped.
I think he's got some pussy.
Yeah.
Well, I would hope so. I wouldn't hate him for it. I think it would be a good thing.
I would love him for it.
But he's a monk. Isn't he?
Yeah, but I mean...
I mean, isn't that like part of the whole thing? It's the celibacy, the idea that, you know, you're beyond the needs of the flesh?
Yeah, there's like the... I mean, I don't... Honestly, I've heard with Tibetan Buddhism that there's some tantric sex that happens in there, and
we should probably Google this, right?
Yeah, is the Dalai Lama?
Is the Dalai Lama?
Is the Dalai Lama celibate?
Celibate.
I'd love to know that.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting question. This keyword sucks a fat dick.
I guess understand why monks say to be celibate if it's not an ethical decision. I understand like the complication that can come from fucking people is ridiculous.
Spectacular.
It's conflagrations, like lifelong conflagrations. You can bring a being into life, you know.
Yeah, you can. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a pain in the fucking ass, man.
He's not only supposed to be a virgin. Yeah, he's a virgin. Yeah,
well, there you go, ladies.
The Dalai Lama's a virgin.
Dude, have you heard about that glue in India that you blast into your balls to clog up your seminal semen?
Yeah, you sent it to me.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? It's load glue?
Load glue. It's the new male birth control that apparently is not as permanent as getting a vasectomy. It lasts between 5 and 10 years, but they essentially just put airplane glue or some kind of gel into your... They just glue you up. So you can't... Your jizz doesn't have the fucking worms in it anymore.
That's sad. You're poisoning your loads. How could that possibly be good?
You shoot poison loads. I bet your loads smell like fucking...
You're going to make zombie babies.
Your loads probably smell like rubber cement.
Could you imagine if that was like the beginning of the next fucking 28 Days Later type movie? It turns out that you shoot some shit into your loads, but it makes is zombie babies that eat their way out of your pussy.
That's fucking great. Yeah. That's a great horror movie.
Bites the doctor in the hand. The doctor becomes a zombie. Zombie doctor fucking furiously attacks all the nurses. They all stab each other. They come into a fucking puddle, slippery of blood. A bunch of zombie fucking doctors biting each other and shit.
All from one fucking zombie baby.
All from one zombie baby from one zombie load that was created by this crazy drug.
An Indian doctor.
Just a tornado of infection spreads through the nation from this one hot point.
Well, we don't
call
know.
In Dustin Hoffman in a fucking spacesuit.
But you know what? He knows that he just had that procedure done to his balls. And he, like, shot a load into his girlfriend and she's pregnant. So, like, the suspense through the movie is wondering if his girlfriend has got a zombie baby in her.
Mm.
This is a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Directors out there, let's get this made.
Whoever made Troll Hunter, please contact us.
Troll Hunter
is great. It's really fun, man.
I know. I love that movie, man.
It's a fun movie. It was the foreign one, right?
Yeah.
The one in subtitles?
Yeah. Oh, wait. No, I thought you were talking about the worst movie ever made.
No, this is actually not that bad. It's about a guy who goes and hunts trolls. There's, like, real live trolls.
Troll Hunter's fun.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, Troll Hunter. Yeah.
That's really great.
It's really fun.
And it's shot like found footage.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, Troll Hunter's the best. Man.
Yeah.
That was really good.
It's a fun movie.
More movies like that, please.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
I love stupid movies, man. Like, I'm so looking forward to The Avengers. So much so that I feel like I'm getting away with something by being able to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm 44 years old. At a certain point in time, I'm supposed to be past that. I'm supposed to be, you know, interested in mature things, I'm not. I want to watch the Hulk fuck somebody up.
Let me tell you, something, man. That fucking idea of maturity, or how you're supposed to act at some certain age. What the fuck is that idea? Because the way you're supposed to act is so boring. Like, it's basically saying, just act like you're just a dying old piece of shit. You don't like fucking super insane special effects anymore. You certainly don't like video games.
My kids with their music these days.
You go to bed at 10. You know, like, fuck that. Whose idea was that anyway? That was just like a control freak boring guy. It's like, this is how an adult acts.
Yeah, well, it gets to a certain point in time where you compromise your thinking every day so much so for work. You know, if you have to go in and every day you got to sell vacuum cleaners, and you're a dude, I guarantee you there's some days where you don't want to go in and sell fucking vacuum cleaners. You don't want to not swear all day. You don't want to wear a tie. You know, but you got it. That's part of the job. And so one of the ways to sort of keep that going, where, you know, you're extreme, is like to make the whole rest of your life less extreme as well. Yes. No more fun shit. You need a sensible car. You can't drive a Mustang. You know, you need to stop getting drunk on the weekends. You've got a job.
You've got to become SFW.
Yeah.
Safe for work.
Safe for work. Yeah, and that's why they're allowed to drug test you.
Yeah.
That's one of the most incredible things that we've let happen in this country. Employers are allowed to drug test their employees. That's insane. The idea that someone, you pay for a person's work. You don't own their flesh. You don't own them as a human being. And especially when we're talking about stuff like medical marijuana, which is actually supposed to be legal in California. There's a lot of places where you still can't get a medical marijuana prescription. You can't get an exemption and work for a lot of different companies.
Yep.
They won't have it. They won't hire you. They don't want any potheads.
Yeah, it's a real problem, because with corporations, I just learned this word and I really fucking love it. It's called diffusion of responsibility, which is the idea that in corporations, the responsibility gets, so many people make decisions on things that no one person's to blame, right?
Yeah.
So you know, in the corporation, somewhere in the corporation, not everyone's anti-marijuana, just a couple of cunts, and you don't know who they are, but they got that in there. They're all, you know, at some meeting, they just got it in where other people didn't agree with them, and they didn't speak up. That's what's annoying about it. You know that this is coming from just a few dipshits. The majority of people have no problem with it. Fucking Nancy Pelosi. Did you see she came out against Obama? Did you see that shit?
What'd she do?
She pointed out the fact that Obama's busted more dispensaries than Bush did.
Wow.
Because she's pro medical marijuana, and she talked about all the help, how many people it actually helps, and like, what the fuck is Obama doing? Why is he arresting all these people when we voted on it? You know?
Diffusion of responsibility is another place that's used.
Yeah.
That's in rape.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where one person is much more likely to be able to rape another person when there's a big group of people around.
Yep.
Because nobody knows who should act first, and everybody feels like it's not their responsibility because there's so many people.
You always got to act first. That's the rule. Always act first. If you see someone on the fucking street who doesn't look like they're doing okay, stop and ask them if they're okay. If you see somebody's car is fucked up on the side of the road, not a flat.
What if it's the first zombie? What if you go, are you okay? And that fucking bitch leans over and bites your arm in half.
Yes.
And blood's screaming. You're screaming as you're driving to the hospital. You turn into a zombie and crash into a tree.
Look, man, there's like a 90% chance if you see someone on the street and try to help them that they're probably the first zombie.
It could happen.
But it could be the other 10%.
Hey, man, look, I'm not taking any chances. When the zombie apocalypse hits, you don't want to be fucking patient zero. That's what I'm saying.
What if you see a rape happening and you try to stop it and it was just a dude trying to rape a zombie?
Or a zombie trying to rape a dude. That would be a lot scarier. Because if, like...
raping zombies? That's the next step!
If a dude was raping a zombie, you go, he's an idiot. Why would you want to rape a zombie?
That's the next evolution of zombies. Because we made them run. Now
and
we
raped them. Yeah, being an ultimate fighting champion, that's not badass enough. You need to be a zombie raper.
Yeah.
Have you ever raped a zombie? And the thing about raping a zombie is they'll fight hard, but no one cares if you beat the shit out of them. You could, like, let zombies loose in the field, and you could just go beat the shit out of them.
No, dude, this is a sketch. I actually wrote a sketch like this.
The problem is zombies can infect you, right?
Yes.
How does that work? That doesn't make any sense. Only 28 days later, zombies can infect you.
Well, no. The
biological warfare
there's different explanations, and The Walking Dead's got a really fucking good one that I... It's a good spoil, a lot of shit to say it, but there's a lot of different explanations for it that's pretty cool, the way that the creators of these stories come up with, like, what it is.
Right.
It's, I mean, there's no rule for it. It could be anything.
But in The Walking Dead, it's a biological thing where it infects people. But there's movies where they come out of the ground. So obviously that's not what's up in those.
No, that's a whole
Those are different ones.
That's like, I mean, which ones do they come out of the ground? That's Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah, that kind of shit.
One of my favorite fucking
genius goddamn movies.
You know why it was great? Because the zombies could fucking talk.
Yeah.
So remember they had that lady strapped to the table? Spoiler alert. They had that lady strapped to the table who was like a half lady. Remember that?
Yeah.
And they're like, they asked her. Because no one's asked a zombie. They asked her, why do you eat brains? Remember that?
Yeah.
Brains! Brains! She's like,
wow.
It stops the pain of death!
Oh my God.
Right, dude. Because we never get to really interview a zombie.
I remember that now.
Yeah.
That's right. They would call out brains.
Brains!
Brains!
Oh, that was such a good
movie. Dude, that was a great... I mean, I was confusing that with Night of the Living Dead. Return of the Living Dead is actually better.
Return of the Living Dead, they pop out of graves.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Dead, as I recall, the opening of Night of the Living Dead, remember it's in the graveyard and he's trying to scare his girlfriend. And she's like, who's that man walking back there? And there's some dude kind of walking far away. This is when zombies couldn't walk fast.
Right.
And so he just kind of ambles up to the guy and, like, it throws him down. The guy hits his head on a gravestone and then she's, like, driving away in terror. But we never know if that zombie emerged from a coffin. I think that was somebody who was, like, first of all, you're not going to get out of a fucking coffin if you're a zombie. Zombies are already weak.
Are they weak?
Well, they all vary. Night of the Living Dead zombies, weak, slow, lumbering, purely retarded.
So if you were like a really good kickboxer, you could probably like keep a lot of them off of you.
Easily.
Their body. A lot of leg kicks.
A simple moat would fix most of the...
But if they bite you, you're fucked, right?
You're fucked.
You're a zombie now.
If you get bitten by a zombie, you're a zombie.
Is that Night of the Living Dead as well?
That's Night of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead. I think all of them share the idea that if you get bitten by one, you turn into one.
Huh. I thought you had to die in some of them.
Oh.
And then you come back as a zombie.
Well, I think in all of them. Night of the Living...
Not 28 Days Later, remember? You just get one bite and you're fucked. Remember when that chick hatcheted her boyfriend?
Yes.
She macheted him and he's like, it's just a scratch. And she just, fuck you. And just, whoosh, 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 with a fucking machete. She macheted him in the kitchen. That was radical. Remember that?
That was such a good fucking movie.
That was a great fucking movie. That's the greatest zombie movie of all time. 28 Days Later, in my opinion, is the greatest because it's the most original. The whole scene when the guy wakes up... And he doesn't know what the fuck is going on. That's really the same scene that The Walking Dead has used. They've used the same sort of theme. This guy wakes up in the hospital and he doesn't realize that the world has turned to a fucking zombie shithole.
Right.
Well, that's... How do you get to do that? That's sort of the same scene as 28 Days Later.
You know what we'd have to look into is which came first. 28 Days Later or The Walking Dead comics.
Because that
comes from The Walking Dead comics. So whichever came
first.
Well,
let's find out.
Yeah,
Walking Dead comics. Let's find out.
The best Walking Dead comics. Buy them if you haven't. They're so fucking good.
How many years do you think they've been around for?
I don't know, but for a long time. There's a lot of them, and the show is good. I love the show. The show gets a little too soap opera like, but the fucking comics are just brutal and just if you haven't, download them to your iPad and buy them because they're fucking awesome.
Let's see, Wikipedia.
This is cool that we can figure this out instantly.
Yeah, we live in a fucking beautiful time, man. Some guy said something really recently. I'll go look at it after I figure this out. 2003
is what?
Is first issue of the Walking Dead comics. So now, let's look up Return of the Living Dead.
No. 28 Days Later.
Oh, yeah, sorry. 28. I think that was earlier. I'm pretty sure, but I'm just guessing. Let's see. 2002.
Ooh.
It's earlier.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. Well, that's so close that it might have been parallel thinking.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? These guys. First of all, it's kind of like, if you're going to make a zombie movie about a big apocalypse, wouldn't a cool way to do it to be wake up? And,
yes.
And, I mean, everybody's afraid. You wake up and you're going to get up in the morning and nuclear bombs had already dropped.
You know what else it serves? What purpose it serves is you don't have to explain how it happened.
Yeah.
Because you start at the beginning of the guy waking up, so you don't really have to go into the whole shit preceding it. Which, by the way, I fucking love.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead. Oh.
Yeah.
Remember Dawn of the Dead in the fucking news studio? Remember that? It's all falling apart. It's just starting to fall the fuck apart, and people are trying to, like, rationalize what's happening, and SWAT teams are going in and just blowing the shit out of people, and all of society's collapsing. I love that. I like starting at the collapse of society and then going into the post-apocalyptic state. I hate movies that are the lead-up to the disaster, where, like, 80% of the movie is, like, the lead up, and then you just get 20% of apocalypse. I like fucking 90% apocalypse.
You know what's a really cool movie?
What?
It's weird. It's very original. It's called Pontypool. It's I think it's a Canadian movie, and it's about these people that are in they're in a radio studio. The whole show takes place. The whole movie takes place in, like, essentially one scene. It's one area. It's all in this radio studio. They're trapped in there while this zombie apocalypse is raging through their town.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking cool.
That's fucking cool, man.
Yeah, and the people that were working with them become infected, and they're trapped in the sound booth. They realize that these things are blind, but they can hear you, and they can smell you, and they're, like, trying to get at them through the glass. It's pretty fucking cool, man.
Sucks.
It's, like, a real low-budget sort of a movie, but I found it to be pretty original.
Dude.
If you know what I'm saying, it's like one of those, you want to watch something creepy, let's watch something creepy nights.
Yeah, that's, have you seen The Road, or read The Road?
Dude, that's the Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
I watched that up until the point when he was teaching his son how to shoot himself in the mouth. And
yes.
I was like, check, please.
Yes. I think the author of that book was Cormac McCarthy, I think. I can't remember the name. The book was insane. But that fucking movie, man. To me, that really captured what it's going to look like if it all
goes
in flames. That's what it fucking looks like. Just want people just desperately trying to find food. Because even The Walking Dead, like, they're trying to find food, but somehow, like, they always end up, I guess they're on a farm and part of it, but they end up with some pretty nice home-cooked meals. And people, you know, people are like...
People have, like, setups where they have big fences and...
Yeah, and they look...
Crossbows.
They look healthy. They look like they've been taking vitamins and going on a fucking treadmill. Because they have, because they're actors.
Right.
But the fucking... The road, man.
Yeah.
Nobody looks good.
Yeah, it looks like they told nobody to eat
for,
like, days before you shoot.
Pale and stressed out.
Yeah.
And, like, man, this fucking...
That would be the way to do it, too. If you were going to be one of those method guys, one of those Gary Oldman motherfuckers, I bet he would not eat for a couple days.
Yeah, I mean, you don't eat, and you drink a lot of fucking coffee, and you lose a lot of sleep, and you get into a nice fatigued state of, like, stress. Because that's what it is. That's what it's going to be like, man. It's going to be fucking... pure stress. You're probably gonna die. You're probably gonna get arrested. You're probably gonna watch a friend die. You're probably gonna watch your girlfriend get raped by some fucking super powerful dudes who are just like, fuck it. And it's not gonna be like the criminals that you see on Mad Max. They're gonna be dumber than those. It's just gonna be dumb people who have power. It's just dumb people with a gun. That's gonna be the problem when the fucking grid shuts down. Dumb people with guns.
And it is entirely within the realm of possibility. It's ignored, but it's entirely within the realm of possibility. This is so fragile. We have a house made of toothpicks and tissue paper, and it's on the edge of a cliff.
Yeah.
In relationship to how our civilization is set up and structured for longevity in this incredibly volatile galaxy,
yeah,
and this incredibly volatile solar system, just the planet itself, all the natural shit that can go down, and on top of it, all the dumb fucking shit that we're doing, like nuclear power.
Let me tell you something, dude. People are fucking assholes. If you want fucking proof of that, go check out the Dark Ages. Go look at what the fucking Catholic Church did to our species. This is where it gets crazy about the Catholic Church, dude. The Catholic Church molested our species when they were in their teens. When our species was just fucking getting shit going, the Catholic Church came in and just started torching people, burning people, killing people left and right, wiping out entire civilizations all in the name of Jesus. And all of this from an interpretation of the fucking New Testament, which is Pauline theology, from a guy who never met Christ. And some people speculate the real disciples thought he was a liar, called him a liar, called Paul a liar, which is why when you look at the epistles from Paul, a lot of times he's defending himself. He's like, I'm not a liar. I mean, why would you say this to me? Because the real disciples were like, hey, dude, who the fuck are you?
So he was like a late-night infomercial salesman.
There you go. Exactly. And that shit got adopted by the Roman Empire because they wanted to go to war. And they just were like, yeah, let's use this. We can use this. Let's figure out a way to make love your neighbor as yourself and love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul into going into the Middle East and stealing all their gold. Let's figure out a fucking way to do how to do that. Oh, I know. Here's an idea. I know. They're heathens. Let's go over there and kill the motherfuckers in the name of the guy who said, don't kill anybody.
You know, I've had this, we've had this really intense series of conversations with people about conspiracy theories lately, both pro and con, like having Brian Cowan, who doesn't believe in any conspiracy theory, and Eddie Bravo, who believes in a lot of conspiracy right. theories. But the most fascinating thing to me is how many people will just blatantly dismiss conspiracy theories, like 9/11 is my favorite one. You cannot dismiss 9/11 as a conspiracy theory because it was a conspiracy that caused 9/11 from the enemy in the first place. Okay, someone conspired some big event and made some human beings made planes fly into buildings and a bunch of people died. That is a fact.
100%.
The idea that no one could conspire to do that is ridiculous because it had to be a conspiracy in order for it to happen in the first place.
Let me talk.
It's a lot of people involved. They had to keep their mouth shut. They had to pass information through in JPEG form. They would fucking send things to each other by sending each other innocuous looking emails with pictures in them, and then people would take those pictures and open them up in a program that would allow to see writing in between the ones and zeros of the image.
Yes. And humans,
how about that?
Here's the thing. I always
That's pretty dope.
I always look at this shit from the perspective of, like, whenever you get to be in any kind of corporation, if you go to a high enough level, you realize that people stop following the same rules that everybody right. else followed. Like, I can remember I used to work at this summer camp in North Carolina called Camp Pinnacle, and I can remember, like, I went to camp there too as a camper, but I can remember at one point at being a counselor, and then, like, the people who ran the camp came during the time when all the kids were supposed to be taking naps to my cabin, like, hey, come on. And then we went out in the lake and just floated on inner tubes. And I was like, fuck, this is breaking all the rules, but it's the people running the camp breaking the rules, so it's totally cool. But that's a tiny, tiny micro right. example, but it's the same thing all yeah, over the place up top, where it's like,
yeah.
look, dude, don't worry about that cocaine charge. What? Oh, wait, how much do you owe in taxes? Don't worry about that. We'll take care of that, man.
Well, how about when presidents leave office and then dismiss a whole bunch of people?
Yeah.
Like, who are these pardons? Presidents are allowed to, like, right. just give wide open pardons to, like, best. A gang of people for doing all kinds of creepy shit.
Yeah, man. Why do they get to do that, you know?
That's a crazy rule. You get to bypass the whole legal system, and they have, like, a list. It's not just one person. Like, they have a personal cause. There's a guy who's unjustly accused, and I think this man needs to be pardoned. And no, it's not that. It's yeah. There's a list. They get, like, 20 or 30 of them or something crazy.
Oh, sure, man.
How many do they get to pardon?
I don't know, but
I bet it's an unlimited amount.
I bet there's some fucking checks coming in, though.
Because I feel like somebody's abused it recently. Like, maybe Clinton. how many pardons does a president get? Is that what it'd be?
Yeah.
God, this keyboard sucks.
That's crazy, though, man. That is crazy. So, yeah, I think fucking conspiracies happen because they happen in the smallest levels of society. Why wouldn't they happen in the highest levels of society?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, of course, man. It's everywhere you go, man.
Unless people, like, are operating under the illusion that politicians are honest or don't, like...
Presidents can pardon as many people as they want.
So that you could pardon everyone.
God damn.
So if you were the president, like, if Obama got pissed and went out of office as the last attack, he could be like, I'm pardoning every prisoner in every prison all over the country.
Yo, dude, sweat this. President Clinton issued 456 executive clemency orders, 395 pardons, and 61 commutations between 93 and January 20th of 2001.
That's amazing.
President Bush has 191 pardons. Jimmy Carter granted amnesty to all Vietnam-era draft dodgers. Wow.
That's cool.
That's pretty beautiful.
So Obama, when he gets out of office, he could pardon all people in there for medical marijuana.
You know who dodged the draft in Vietnam? Ted Nugent. It's kind of crazy.
No shit.
Because he's just like, he's such a pro-war guy. But there's a depiction of what he did. I don't know if it's true. But, I mean, he definitely didn't go to war. But now he's like super pro-war. As he's gotten older.
Pro-war is a weird stance.
Well, the idea of pro-America, I mean, look, if we really were living in the Game of Thrones, you better be fucking pro-America. You know, you better be, like, down for this one team, because otherwise some Dothraki hordes from the other side of the world might fucking hop on a ship and come over and jack you.
That's right.
It was very important back then. But as we're connected by the internet, the idea of countries is becoming less and less relevant. It's all about local government and laws, and the whole world is one big fucking connection. The whole world is one big piece. That's why all these people in the Middle East are freaking out. The real rally and cry for freedom is coming from the internet. That's how they're using Twitter, and they're using Facebook to communicate with, and you know, yeah. That's all emanating from the internet, man.
Well, man, I heard this thing, and I never read it. I think a teacher told me this, and I never explored it. I'm sure I'll find out now, though. But it was this idea that about communism and how Karl Marx said that real communism was going to be a natural evolution of society into real communism, not something imposed,
right.
Something that's just a natural, obvious result of people getting smarter and understanding the way things work. And
money aids in a lot of things. What it does is it gives you an incentive to innovate. It gives you an incentive to work hard. It gives you something to show a score,
sure.
Which a lot of people like
definitely.
To see. Amazing. If you want innovation.
Right. I'm definitely certainly not a communist.
No, I know you're not.
I'm definitely not anti-money. But what I'm starting to see happening is that the more that you work in like little collectives with people, the more you help the people around you, you know, as much as you can, just the people directly around you, the more that group rises up and succeeds. Right,
yes.
And this is the idea of the you know new form of like podcast networks, which is where you have like my friend, he's doing a podcast network called Feral Audio, and the idea is it's just a group of people that are like plugging in together and like sharing profits. This is the new model of things. It's a collective
right.
Of artists and people.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if the podcast world represents a microcosm of the entire you know.
Well, no.
Universe.
But here's the thing. This is what's beautiful about it, and this is why I bring it up as a new thing. The reason that it's the reason we can do podcasts, and the reason like you just shot your own special on your own, and the like seeing comedians shoot their own special on their own, is because we have more access to technology
right.
Than we had before, and technology is shrinking and getting smaller, which is basically creating a situation where collectives form instead of the pyramid, Illuminati, top down. Power structure, where someone owns the equipment and gets the majority of the dough. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like everything's shifting, widening out, spreading out. And that's why these fucking tyrants in the Middle East, it doesn't work when people have information.
Right.
It doesn't work.
Well, you know, I remembered when they were talking to Muhammad Ali, because when I was a kid, I remember when he had gotten... when he had fought Michael Spinks, it was on television. It was like a big deal. I remember my parents were trying to explain to me when I was a kid, like what had happened, that they had kept him from fighting. Like my parents wanted to see him fight. I can't believe my parents were into fighting at all, but they wanted to see Muhammad Ali beat Leon Spinks.
Yeah.
It was like some important fight. And their idea was that this guy was like a cultural hero, because what he had done was stepped up and said, why would I shoot a guy in Vietnam? No Vietnam man ever did anything to me.
Right.
You know, and he's right. And he was 100% right. And everybody knew it. And it made sense. And because of that, they punished him. And they wouldn't let him box for 3 years.
Right.
You know, they took away his livelihood in the prime of his career, like physically.
Yeah, that phenomena that you just described has been going on since the history of,
sure.
Of top-down power structures. This book I'm reading, and now I can't remember the name, it's so fucking good, but it's got a picture of Copernicus standing before, like, Catholic popes and being judged for talking about the fact that the Earth revolves around the sun. You know? It's like, this is a... People say the truth throughout history, and many people have gone to jail or gotten burned at the fucking stake for it. Ooh, hello.
That's coconut water.
I think the last time I drank this energy drink...
It's pretty mellow.
It's pretty
mellow for an energy drink. It's like a lot of it is natural. It's like B12 in it and shit.
Did these guys sponsor you?
No, it's just a friend of mine.
Limelight.
Powerful Limelight. My friend Tom Atencio, he used to run Affliction, and he was the guy who put together the, or one of the guys who put together their mixed martial arts cards that they had, and I always appreciated that he did that. Affliction supported MMA, so I became friends with him, and I was wearing their shirts for a little while, but then they fired him, so I quit out of respect for my friend.
I
avoided my partnership with them. So he sends me soda now. he's cool as fuck. He's a good dude. I just really respected what he and his company did for MMA. They really supported a lot of fighters. They supported a lot of fighters by promoting them. They put on actual shows. They had, I think, 3 big shows. You know, and some of them were fucking great. They were great fights. They put together some wild fights, but they just found out it's way too expensive. People don't realize how much money the UFC spends behind the scenes, like how much it costs to keep the machine running.
Oh, God.
Like it's an amazing amount of work. There's so many people behind the scenes, and all of them have a long history. And the UFC has this big name, you know. It's hard to fuck with that. It's like to try to make a rival football league, even if you have a lot of talent. Man, everybody knows what the NFL is. You know, they tried that shit a couple of times. They tried it with the XFL. Remember, it was like Vince McMahon, the wrestling guy, tried to do that. It's hard. It's hard to get people to you know, and the UFC is consistent with getting the best talent. Consistently get the best talent.
Like, what's her name?
Oh, yeah. Ronda Rousey?
No, the girl who walks around with the number.
Oh, Ariane.
Oh, man.
You like
she
her?
She is beautiful.
She's got a perfect face.
Oh, my God. Perfect everything, man.
Her face is just, she has a flawless face. You know, it's like, wow. She's so pretty.
What's really funny about watching her is she's gotten down this casual wave to the hordes of pervs who are screaming at her, like not acknowledging the fact that it's like an apocalypse now where you're surrounded by the sea of testosterone. She does this little side, like, 2-finger wave, like,
Do you remember that scene? That was a great fucking scene in Apocalypse scene. Now.
Yeah.
That seems so real.
Totally real, man.
If you'd ever seen it, what happens is these guys are over there fighting at war. It's only men. There's thousands of them. And they fly in these Playboy Playmates, and they're, like, dancing around on stage, and it just gets angry. It's just it becomes like a mosh pit of gorillas, and eventually they have to abandon and fucking fly out of there.
Yeah, that was one of the best, that movie was so
good. Did someone get left behind in that scene?
I don't remember. I don't remember. Can I ask an important question?
I think
a lot of UFC fans wonder this every day, me included.
Okay.
What's her name?
Ariane?
Does she have a boyfriend?
I do not know if she currently has a boyfriend. I do not know.
Well, we're dying to know because we all feel like we
do. You think everyone has a shot?
No.
That girl gets bombed on by...
I can't... By princes.
Yeah,
by the
of course.
She gets bombed on by the Rothschild. She gets bombed on by people who, like, transform into a reptilian in front of her. Here, take a diamond.
She wouldn't do this, but if she wanted to. She wouldn't, but if she wanted to. She's the type of chick that could get some, like, Middle East king to fly her out for, like, $1 million.
Easy.
Yeah, easy. $1 million a night.
That's great. That's fucking crazy.
Fucking for $10 million. Yeah, I mean, if you have $1 trillion, like, from what I understand, there's, like, royal families that have so much money, and their money's not public. Like, when people look at, like, who's, like, the richest man in the world, oh, it's Bill Gates, or it's probably not. It's actually probably some dude in the Middle East that doesn't talk about it at all, and you don't know, some prince, or, like, they have extraordinary amounts of money, and I don't think that a lot of times it gets measured up in the same pile. I might be wrong about that, but from what people have told me about, like really, really wealthy people in the Middle East, they're some of the wealthiest people on Earth.
Well, no,
like, that it's like insane, staggering amounts of wealth.
The thing I like to think about is, like, maybe, you know, like when you walk by a school and you see all the kids playing in the playground. Some of them are fucking playing like four square. Some of them are running around playing tag, and they're just having a blast. Sometimes I think maybe that's what society is. Maybe we're just like kids playing around in this playground that's been created by really, really smart, super wealthy people who kind of watch. Maybe they have some fun with us. They like throw shit in there every once in a while just to play around. But they're so fucking powerful and rich. They don't need to go in there and like seem like they're famous or act like they're magical. They just like to watch. It's fun. Every once in a while they'll throw in something crazy, you know. Every once in a while they'll throw in the AIDS virus or toss in something.
Well, when you have power for no reason, which essentially everyone at the very top of the heap has, there's no reason why you should have power. Okay, now if you have power for no reason, you know that it's not like you earned your power through your basketball skills, you know, the fact that you shoot a wicked three-pointer or you're awesome at the violin. No, there's no real tangible skill that you present that anybody else couldn't also have. You know, I mean, what is vague characteristics like leadership and intelligence, the ability to speak well? Goddamn, there's a lot of people that have that.
Or handshake.
Yeah, there's thousands of people out there in your neighborhood that can do that, okay? So they know that you have to be treacherous in order to retain this power. When you see different laws every day that are being brought up, like the National Defense Authorization Act, all this other different stuff, when you see like civil liberties getting eroded, and you see corruption getting eroded, there's your evidence. That is the exact evidence that you need to know that the people that are in a position of power shouldn't be in power. They're right. Trying to get more and more and more control. Why are you trying to get more and more control? Why are you actively trying to get control? Instead of dealing with the issues that we already have, dealing with the crime that we already have, dealing with, you know, unsolved murders or what have you, instead of devoting your time into that aspect of helping society with law, instead of doing that, you're trying to take away civil liberties. You're trying to erode people's freedoms.
Yeah.
That's the purest sign ever that the people who are in a position of power shouldn't be in a position of power.
It's really sad, too.
It's pure. There's no arguing it. There's no denying it. Obama can never deny it. If you brought it up to him, there's nothing he could say. There's no way anybody could say, for your own good, we need to take away your ability to send a private email to somebody. You can't have that.
Well, what they say is they inevitably, one thing that they'll always say, is it's complicated. It's a very complex system. You don't understand. There's a lot more to it than just legalizing marijuana. There's a lot more to it, Joe. It's always complicated. Vampires love complication. They love tangles and complexity and the opposite of simplicity. Simply because they, you know why? Because they fucking hate the truth. And the truth is always simple. The truth is always just a very simple thing. It's a, you know, you jump off a cliff, you're going to die. It's if you fucking don't eat, you're going to be hungry. There's just some, it's a tweet. The truth is a tweet.
Yeah.
Fucking vampires, they will take a truth and they'll transform it and extrapolate so much shit from it that it turns into a fucking lie. And then they say, you know, we can't, it's just too tangled up. The world's economy is just too confusing. This is why we've got to exploit these people. This is why we've got to throw farmers in jail, because it's complicated. This is why we're at war. We can't just not go to war. It's complicated. It's always complicated. But in real life, it's not complicated. There's nothing fucking complicated about, you probably shouldn't throw bombs places where there's kids. That's like if you see somebody throwing bombs in a place where there's some kids, you're going to be like, you know, you probably shouldn't do that. It fucking kills kids. But like when it's that one, we don't understand. There's a target.
Insurgents.
Insurgents could be in that. Oh, you mean fucking farmers who are sick of you driving tanks through their opium fields? Is that the insurgents you're talking about?
Well, you've seen the original video from WikiLeaks, right? The collateral murder video?
Yeah.
Where it shows the helicopter shooting missiles and shit into a car that has kids in it?
Oh, yeah.
And they, you know, and someone says it's kids. Well, you know, they shouldn't have been taking their kids while they're carrying guns. I mean, whatever the fuck they said. You know, you shouldn't have your kids with you. As if they should have thought about that since they're the enemy. Yeah. They should have. Meanwhile, they were innocent. They shot a bunch of innocent people. It was a complete, total clusterfuck.
Sure. It's not complicated. It's a real simple thing about life. That's the thing. Here's the thing. Yeah. It's a simple, there's some simple ideas, man.
You're not supposed to shoot into cars that have kids in them.
You're not supposed to shoot into cars that have kids in them. And also, if you send out good energy into the world, you get good energy back. There's another basic principle that you can test all day. Test it next week. Just
They didn't even, like, zoom in to see if the people do have guns. they mean they just fucking gunned him down, man. See, you know, to have that ability and that kind of power, you know, and they're like, you know, and they're saying, oh, we're pretty sure this guy's got a gun and this guy's got a gun, and they're like, permission to engage, and they get permission, they just fucking open up on these people,
yeah,
and that's it. Those people don't exist anymore.
And it's
and we wouldn't even know that that is happening. We wouldn't even know. Have you seen the new video, the Blackwater video that's been released recently?
No.
The Young Turks had it on. That guy Senk. I really like that guy's show. He's fucking fearless, man. He attacks everything. He attacks like he goes after that Peter Schiff guy. You know, Peter Schiff, when he starts, you know, making excuses for Wall Street.
Right.
You know, and the way to fix this. And he's just like, no, and he calls him out on it. He's like, you just want to keep extracting more money from the system. You just want to keep, you're talking bullshit. And he cut him off. And I liked it, man. It was interesting. But he was talking about this, and he was talking about how, what was the fucking law? What was the law that was passed?
Which one?
Shit. I've completely lost my thought. What was his fucking thing about?
The Young Turks?
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Shit. God damn it.
Look.
I'll remember.
Let's rewind a few steps back. All this macro shit, man, thinking about the macro, the conspiracy.
Yeah, but this is going to drive me crazy if I don't remember what this fucking guy's video was about. Oh, the Iraqi. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. This is why. It was so disturbing. I'm probably trying to forget it. It was watching the Blackwater guys. The Young Turks made a video about this and exposed it and showed there's new videos that have been released that were like from the actual cars of the guys in Blackwater that were driving around smashing into people's cars. One of them, they hit a lady while she was walking across the street. And you see the guy, see the lady go down, go, oh, shit, and then they just drive on. They just left her there. And they're smashing into people's cars. They're sticking their guns out the window and just randomly shooting at things. It's really fucking crazy. It's really crazy to watch, man. It's really crazy, and there's no getting around that. You can't, you know what you were talking about, making the Catholic religion or any kind of crazy cult that wants to have some sort of a justification for doing something really fucking wrong will read you some huge volume and tome on why it is that what they're doing is the correct move for everybody else in the long run. When you show a video like that, is that correct move using mercenaries, man?
Right.
You see how crazy this is? You got people that are willing to kill people for money, and you're paying them a fuckload of it, and you're letting them just run amok.
No, man. I mean, this is a problem that will always exist as long as power structures are triangular instead of circular, and there's no way around that, man. There's always just going to be that. There's no way around that. And the problem is, when power structures are triangular, they don't usually, the people at the top of that fucking triangle, the pyramid, they won't listen to logic. They don't care about what's right or what's wrong. They're not going to listen to you. You have to take the power from them.
Right.
That's what the idea of the fucking...
Well, they have to die off, too. That's the other possibility.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Let's hope they die off, because it's been a few thousand years, and they don't seem to be going anywhere. It's just they take different forms. They put on different masks. And admittedly, the violence is lessening and lessening, so maybe the violence will dissipate to nothing. I had no idea, man. I've been reading this fucking book about what the goddamn Catholics did to the fucking Cathars, is what they were called. Wikipedia that. The Cathars just got exterminated by the Catholic Church. Just burn at the fucking stake, man. For believing a different version of Christianity. It could have been a threat.
Well, this is a long time ago, obviously. It's just amazing that in 2012, after all the time and all the supposed shit that we had learned from the Dark Ages, and today, even still, you got this video released, this Blackwater video, of people just going to a foreign land and just fucking people up.
Yeah.
You know, it's, that is, at the very peak of our society when it comes to, like, causing change and damage, and that is, like, the highest, most impactful part of our world is war, right?
Yeah.
Most, as far as, like, destruction, and as far as, like, that's, like, society at its breaking point or its boiling point, and it seems to stay at that same level. it seems to stay at that same level where we're always just that close to fucking everything up. We're always that close. And like as good as it ever got was like when Clinton was in office. It didn't really seem like we were going to war anymore.
Yeah.
It seemed like the Soviet Union kind of falling apart and we're the only big dog in town. We're pretty cool. We're not going to fuck with anybody. So let's just, you know, it felt like everything was going to be okay.
Yep.
But then it went right back up to its boiling point, and you realize that boiling point where we had with the Clinton boiling point, that was unusual. That was unusual. The lack of threat of imminent death. That's the unusual thing. This normal thing that we've gone through with the Bush administration and that we go through with the Obama administration now, that's unusual. Or that is rather the norm. The unusual thing is peace. The unusual thing is prosperity and relaxation and not worrying about fucking bombs dropping over your head from the other side of the world.
Well, it's definitely normal when... the people who are making the laws have apparently been paid off by people who prosper from war. It's totally normal then.
It's just, but it's amazing that it's still pushed through. It's amazing. It's amazing that in this day and age, it can be so obvious, it can be so laid out, and yet still gets pushed through.
Here's what's fucking amazing. What's amazing is there's somebody in a corporation that has to have war happening or they're going to go bankrupt. That's what's amazing. There's people who are like, man, we got to get some wars, dude. Or
our division is strictly missile reconstruction.
Yeah.
And we're not blowing up missiles, then we're not reconstructing areas where missiles destroyed.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly, dude. That's what they're thinking. When they hear that peace might be coming... That's hearing that a fucking, they're about to go bankrupt.
Do you think this call's like, hey, I heard that y'all are running a surplus on a certain missile that we're about to go into construction on, and we don't want to come out with version 2 while y'all still got version 1 going on. Do you think you can make some campaigns where you could put those bad boys to use?
Yeah, let's come on. We shouldn't be afraid to use those.
Do you
things?
Think that a fucking Robert Downey Jr. contractor character could call somebody up and ask him to launch some missiles?
Dude, do you think when those sons of bitches who manufacture that shit watch war footage on the news, they're like, oh, hell yeah, that's a B-96.
That's my boy.
That's the child shredder. Hell yeah. Look at that thing. Look at the spread on that bomb. Woo! Hell yeah. Every time they see that, they're like, cha-ching, cha-ching. Every time a bomb goes off, they're like, yeah, that's $100,000.
Yeah. What about dudes that have like never been to war, but they're like obsessed with like Soldier of Fortune magazine
and that's weird.
Home protection and fucking, you know, packing heat everywhere they go?
Yeah.
They live in the Wild West in the back of their head.
Dude, I gotta tell you, man, I think I got the potential to be like that with guns, man.
It's an equalizer. That's why people like it. If you feel like you've been put in a situation where you could have been in danger physically because some asshole wanted to fuck you up and they could have done that to you, you know, that's a terrible, terrible feeling. So once you've experienced that terrible feeling, you want to have some sort of an equalizer.
Preparation. Nothing wrong with it, man. I mean, and it seems so weird because I know I come off as this kind of like hippie dude, but I was raised in the South, man. And my dad taught me how to be safe with a gun, taught me how fun it was to shoot a gun, taught me, like, you know, took me hunting, and, like, I'm not afraid of guns. I think they're fucking awesome, man. They're really cool. I just don't, I haven't gotten around to buying one in L.A., and now it feels like there's this, you know, we were talking about this around Diaz, and he was saying, like, it'll attract guns. Like,
it's, yeah,
like,
that's what Diaz thinks, yeah.
So a lot of people think that. They think that if you have the weapon, it will act as some kind of magnet for negativity that will, like, bring it to you. It's a superstitious idea, but some part of me, I'm like, oh, shit, maybe so, man. I don't know. Maybe I should just ignore it and not have a gun. Because, I mean, I doubt anyone's... Well, you never know, man. You never know. Somebody could just decide to fucking kick in your door and, like, take your shit and fucking stab you to death.
People do get robbed. There are home invasions. People do scope people out.
It doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen that often. Well, the what's really going on, man, is that there's so many fucking people on this planet. You're hearing about so many different violent acts. Even in bad neighborhoods, violent acts are fairly rare. You know? I mean, there might be a million people, one of them gets shot a day.
It sucks.
It's one in a million.
That's it.
Well, it's not a lot. I mean, it's not a little. You know, when you think about it that way.
It sucks that this is the society we live in, man. This is where we've hit upon in the multiverse. Because, like, think of all the other things that people could break into your house and do. Like, what a great dimension where, like, fucking hot chicks sometimes swarm neighborhoods and just give random blowjobs.
Well, what if you don't want a random blowjob from a hot chick? What if you're trying to, like, control your sperm and you're on this Dalai Lama-type journey and some hot chick breaks into his house and sucks his dick and ruins his whole spiritual journey.
Yeah, what if you turn into a zombie? Like, anyone's not going to want to blow a job from a hot
chick. He's going to realize that he wasted his whole stupid life dressing up like a genie when he could have been just getting his dick sucked from the get-go.
I know! That's a good lesson!
Yeah, it is a good lesson, but you can't force someone to have a lesson.
Well, you can't rape the Dalai Lama.
Well, that's what she would be doing. She'd be raping the poor guy. He couldn't help himself.
I'm not suggesting that hot chicks go and rape the Dalai Lama.
When a woman that hot starts stroking your cock, you are not even in control. You're not even in control. You're a zombie. You are a DNA zombie. You're just trying to shoot DNA. Brains! You're just trying to shoot loads! Loads! You're just trying to get rid of that ache in your balls.
Oh, what a terrible...
Poor Dalai Lama. The whole guy's like me. He's a single, sort of pudgy, weird kind of Asian character who has a lot of really famous friends. You know, he's kind of a name dropper, always hanging out with Richard Gere. I'm not dissing him at all. I'm just being honest about what he looks like.
You know, it'd be awesome.
That would rock his fucking world if some Megan Fox-looking chick came in and started sucking his cock.
What'd be awesome is that the Dalai Lama fired back at you.
Whoa, like you got mad at me?
You're the one.
I don't mean any disrespect to the Dalai Lama.
He's like, yo, fuck you, Joe Rogan.
Whoa, that would be crazy. If I was the first guy the Dalai Lama told to go fuck himself, I'm like, wow, I must be a dick. I'm sure he's a great guy, and I don't think there's anything wrong with doing life the way he's doing. I just think it's when I look at his life in comparison to a life that I would find interesting, I'm like, come on, man. You don't want to have a wife or a girlfriend. You don't want to have sex. You don't want to, like, really? You don't want to engage in, like, fun things? And really? Is that too much? It's too much of an effort to... Is it really too much of an effort to have a relationship? Or can it be managed and you're just a lazy bitch and you can't figure out how to manage your own life and manage your own relationships in a way that you would attract someone who would also have sort of a harmonious relationship with you? You know, for some people, that's like too much work to try to get their own shit together to attract someone. So, I mean, it's like it's a real complicated formula. So to say, oh, that's too much work, I think you miss out on a big part of what it is to be a human being. And he obviously has compassionate relationships with people where he's friends with them and he communicates with them. But to not be exchanging affection, in my opinion, is just this massive misunderstanding of the joy of life.
Right.
Because sex with someone you love that you're really attracted to is one of the most intense physical experiences and beautiful experiences a person can ever have.
Yeah.
It really is. It's intense. It's a beautiful, intense experience that cannot be recreated in a solo environment.
Well, this is the thing. These are things that are impossible to answer because I only read about them. I don't know if it's true or not. But like, I think a lot of people who become hermits and leave society. Of all the people who leave society and become a monk, go and become a hermit, go into the woods and vanish from life.
Yeah.
Of all those people, probably a big percentage of them are doing it as an escape mechanism, right? Right. But I bet there's a small percentage of them that are like, have heard of these peaks that you can climb to in consciousness that certain things will get in the way of getting to those peaks. It's not impossible, but it's kind of like, no, you know, there's a lot of different paths through the forest. Some of them are more difficult than others, and some of them are, especially when you've got the complication of a wife and children, you can't go through some of the forms of discipline that apparently are required to hit a transcendent experience that a lot of people, many, 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 many people have written about. You know what I mean? So I think there is a small group of people who really authentically are just like, I want to fucking go for it. I want to see how far I can go into this. Is there enlightenment? Is there this state of higher awareness that you can get through meditation? I want to do that. And that, you know, the prescription for some of these things is to fucking meditate for years straight.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't do that with fucking kids. You can't do that with a job. You can't do it with the normal complications of society. So you got to go out into the fucking cave to do it.
You know? It's amazing. When you really stop and think about it, it's like no other, or rather, it's like any other discipline. You know, in order to really take it to the highest level, you have to devote all of your time to it.
That's it.
And managing the mind and managing the deep recesses of your consciousness and increasing the brain's ability to focus on certain tasks and things. I mean, they've shown that meditation directly changes the way the brain works.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You know, it's the those What vision is it what they use when they're doing like cross sections of the brain during any sort of a neural activity?
CAT scans?
I don't know if it's a CAT scan. Whatever it is, they run tests on people and they find out like what areas of the brain are affected. Like they have remarkable minds. You know, people that meditate, like Buddhist monks, it's like they've literally like developed a different sort of a brain.
Dude, I don't think my brain's changed, but one of my favorite parts of the day, I wake up in the morning and chant. I fucking love it, dude. And I'll tell you, I'll wake up with my brain squirming with shit thoughts and like anxious sometimes, and just maybe I had a bad dream or like I'm stressed out about something.
Right.
I'll sit down and fucking meditate. 10 minutes, 15 minutes later, it's not gone.
Yeah.
I'm not healed. I'm not cured of the thoughts, but now the thoughts aren't on top. They're underneath my will. They're,
right.
You know what I mean? And that changes everything for the rest of the day, because now when I'm attacking the different problems and things I have to accomplish, the first thing I'm feeling is this sense of self-control, and underneath it are all the anxieties, instead of approaching your problems with an anxious mind or a turbulent mind.
I think managing the mind and putting the mind to good use is just like managing the body and putting the body to good use. And I think the mind can become more athletic. The mind can become
sure.
more synaptic, or more responsive, rather synaptically.
Synaptic, that's cool. Well, no,
you know?
The mind is definitely a
sure. I mean, look, when you write, don't you notice that if you like take time off and write again, you start writing and you feel like a little clunky at first.
Clunky as fuck.
And then after a day or two, you're in the groove, and then
zooming through.
Yeah, and then you get to that. It's like you have to like keep up that sort of shape.
Yes.
You have to keep up a certain creative shape, or you know, or a mind, you know, a meditative sort of a controlled shape.
This is why more people don't meditate, and more people
it's fucking boring.
Discipline lives. It's boring at first. It's boring at first. But after you
lose your mind,
after you lose your mind, after you fucking get past the initial thing, the initial like boredom of it, it turns into something really incredible.
But what's the deepest you've ever gotten?
Through meditation?
Yeah.
Man, the deepest I ever got through meditation was I was super stoned.
That doesn't count.
Oh.
It's the weed is
just. My dear man. Most certainly counts. You can get stoned and meditate. Shit, man. Now, it's one of my favorite things to do is to get stoned and meditate. Fuck, that's the best, man.
McKenna had this funny story about, this funny analogy about UFO abductees, is that the real problem with any stories about that you ever hear about UFOs is that you have to automatically discount every one of them that involved 5 grams of mushrooms.
Well,
it's true too, right?
Yeah.
Because you go, oh, you were tripping, dude. But maybe that's no. But maybe that's how he sees it.
Yeah. Well,
the fuck.
Or maybe like a lot of different philosophies came from people getting really high. That's that book that
yeah.
I showed you. You know, like
right.
the cannabis is a very old plant that we've had a relationship with for a long time.
Yeah.
And people love to invalidate things that you thought up when you were stoned. They love
mm-hmm.
to invalidate states of consciousness you obtain through merging with a plant mother. But I'll tell you, man, fucking getting high, chanting and getting high, wow. That's like, now if you want me to like come up with a time when I wasn't stoned and meditating, I could think of a time when I was on the Zen retreat sitting and staring at a wall and for like 7 hours straight, and like definitely there was a shift in consciousness, and I was like getting
retarded,
getting confused. That was I take offense at that word. I really do. I was getting confused because I've been staring at a wall for so long. I was
right.
getting confused about my identity.
So it was sort of a consciousness ideal poisoning or ordeal poisoning.
Yeah, it was a bit of a poisoning, but like
you're getting confused about your identity.
Well, I was staring at the wall, and I knew I was... I mean, they were talking like 8 hours of fucking meditating, man. Like
staring, just staring at a wall with
yeah,
your eyes open?
Yeah, with your eyes open. Like, you're just kind of going in and out of, like...
You don't ever close your eyes?
No, technically you're not supposed to. This is why in the Zen temples in Japan, where the people really take it seriously, people walk around with fucking rods. And the moment a monk starts nodding off, they get a nice fucking rod in the right on their shoulder. You can
look wow.
Whack! Wake your ass up! Whack!
Wow!
Yeah. So like, and that's
they don't want lazy monks.
No, they want you there in the moment, and you're trying.
What are they trying to accomplish?
Well,
are they gonna make an army of super psychics?
super psychics.
Can you imagine if that's what it is? That's the only way to become like a real warrior. They could become a psychic warrior.
Well, this is the fucking crazy thing, man. I mean, with what's a Zen monk trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
The answer to that? Nothing. That's like a koan.
It's the sound of one hand clapping.
Yeah, but other people who don't have such lofty ideals to merge with the nothingness, these people are trying to accomplish things, and I believe the name of these superpowers or magical traits that you get from disciplining the will are called Siddhis, S-I-D-D-H-I-S.
Siddhis of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah, and these are like the ability, if you start focusing, you know, I would even say that in some weird way, stand-up comedy is a form of Siddhi in the sense that you're able to get in front of a group of people and make them fucking laugh. And it takes a long time to develop. It's a discipline that takes a long time to develop. And you get this skill that's kind of abnormal that some people aren't able to do.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be reading someone's mind. It doesn't have to be levitating or walking through a wall. It's just like, shit, man. When I watch the fucking UFC and see somebody do a flying leg kick into someone's head, that's magic to me. That's a magical fucking thing. That guy, the fact that that guy can do that.
It's very acrobatic.
It's acrobatic. Or when these fucking assholes, they're not really assholes, but when you see them getting their backflip contest, these guys throw a fucking backflip like it's nothing.
Yeah, and this is after fighting for 3 rounds.
After getting, and
wailing on each other for 3 rounds.
And if the backflip doesn't land and you fall, that's going to be played on the internet infinitely. So the risk involved in that backflip is super extreme, man. So to me, that's also a form. It's not real magic in the sense it's explainable,
right.
But it's like, I think that people can develop other forms of this. And the other forms of it, I don't want to use the term telepathy, but maybe people get really good at reading micro gestures or micro movements in someone's face and recognizing when they're telling the truth or when they're telling a lie. Fuck, man. Just someone who's really focused and sitting and listening to you and looking you in the eye in a really focused way, that's unnerving sometimes when someone's got real fucking focus. Because most people don't. Most people are scattered. They're scattered to the fucking winds, man.
Yeah.
They can barely listen to you for 4 minutes without fading out or checking their phone or fucking...
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So will itself, just the ability to draw your senses in and focus on the moment, that's a pretty potent thing to be able to do. And you're not going to get that from playing video games. You're not going to get that from getting drunk all the time. You're not going to get that from fucking all the time. You're going to get that from stopping the show, sitting down, crossing your legs, taking a breath, and not moving for 10 minutes, and watch your mind freak the fuck out. Your mind will turn into a cat that you're trying to put in the bathtub. Your mind will just start wriggling, squirming, warming. Hey, what are you doing? That's almost the first thing it's thinking. It's like, come on, what are you fucking doing here? What are you sitting here not moving for? What is this? Who do you think you are? You think you're fucking Gandhi? What do you think you're doing? Really, you're going to do this? And then that, if you overcome that, then that'll change a little bit. And all of a sudden, you'll start relaxing a little bit. Your body will relax. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, shit, man. I didn't put that fucking candle out in the other room. I should go put that candle out in the other room. I think I left the candle burning in the other room.
Hmm.
And then you just breathe through that. And then it's going to be, oh, fuck, I got to call Jack. I forgot to call Jack. It's all these moments trying to take you away. And it's almost like your mind has set all these infinite traps to keep you from getting in this state of stillness. But eventually, the more you do that, the more your mind will begin to be in the moment and not be in a place of expectation and not be waiting for the meditation to end and not be thinking about how cool it is that you're meditating or how dumb it is that you're meditating. Something else kicks in. That thing. That fucking thing, man. That's the thing that I think people are trying to extend through their entire lifetime. It's just that state of being present in the moment with no goal for what's going to happen, not caring about what happened. You know, it's just a difficult place to get to.
Yeah, and you don't always want to be there either. You don't want to be there all day because you have to live with humans. And if you're going to live completely in that total Zen state, I guess you could do it Ram Dass style and just go video conferencing with people all day online. But if you want to actually try to make a living.
No, the Ram Dass style is really interesting because the Ram Dass style doesn't have ethics attached to it, man.
Right.
That guy fucking talks about going and eating like, going into a fucking restaurant and ordering a steak.
Really?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
He eats steak?
He did in this story. I don't know if he continues to eat meat, but it's like, his whole thing is like, listen, man, it's not, what we're going for here isn't fake imposition. What we're going here for is, what we're going for is this being in the flow of life, being in the moment, letting
it. And sometimes that means have a fucking cheeseburger.
Sometimes eat that burger. Sometimes it means fucking you know, get your cock sucked. Sometimes, you know what I mean? Sometimes it means fuck.
The way you said that was so southern. Get your cock sucked!
Get your cock sucked, boy!
So North Carolina.
Go in my sister's room and get your... I love my southern accent does come out sometimes, but... Yeah, man. This is... This state of being in the moment doesn't mean...
Right, but don't you have some sort of an ethical responsibility for animal cruelty and the pollution of the environment and all the different variables that really, even though you have no control over, you are a part of society and...
Yeah, the macro.
Contribute to the problem by continuing support.
This is what I think about that. I call this, what you're saying, I consider it the starving kid in Africa. The starving kid in Africa has stopped many, many people from experimenting with, like, bringing their will into the world. Because they think, yeah, what about the fucking starving kid in Africa? What about the macro? What about the eating meat hurts animals? And the bigger picture, where I think that is a very valid thing to think about. But I think the first thing to think about before you start thinking about the bigger picture is your little picture.
Right.
It's thinking about how are you treating the people around you? What living condition are you in? Are you healthy? Are you exercising? First deal with that. Deal with that and then worry about the fucking kid in Africa. First deal with that thing and you'll get your focus back. Come out of autopilot first, because your ego will tell you, like, look, man, we've got to think about the big picture. The ego always wants to think about the big fucking picture. The ego always wants to think about, like, the ego is messianic. The ego wants to be Jesus. The ego wants to heal the world, or the ego wants to fucking do all this crazy shit. Meanwhile, you're fucking smoking cigarettes. Your apartment smells like cat litter. Your balls are fucking festering with crab lice. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You gotta fucking think about the fucking moment. You gotta think about the moment.
Yeah, we were talking about a dude who was screaming and yelling about chemtrails while he was smoking cigarettes.
Yeah!
It's like, what you're doing has got to be worse than what they're doing by spraying you.
Absolutely, man. And this I think is the recipe for a true revolution. The recipe for a true revolution does not involve going out into the world and trying to attack these ancient, powerful, monolithic structures by throwing Molotov cocktails at them. It fucking involves stopping, looking at the way you're treating the people directly around you. How do you treat waiters? How do you treat people at the cash register? How do you treat people that you have power over? Even if the power is illusionary and it's just a game, because when you're with a waiter, you're playing the game of someone being served, they're playing the game of the servant. You're just fucking people.
Right.
But you start looking, how am I treating the people around? First, you start looking, how am I treating myself? That's the number one thing.
Yeah, that is the number one
thing. Look at yourself. Are you being empathetic to yourself? Are you being sweet to yourself? Are you taking vitamins? Are you being cruel to yourself? Are you poisoning yourself? Are you shoving poison into your bodies? First, body. First, deal with that. Then, once you start feeling good and healthy again, the depression will start wearing off, and then you start looking at the way you're treating people around you. Then you start tipping too much. This is something you taught me, man. I don't want to go all fucking secret on everybody's ass here, but ever since I started tipping too much, fucking more money than I've ever made has been coming into my life, dude. And I feel like there's some kind of, like, direct correlation between how much you put out and how much comes back to you.
I mean, it's possible. It's also possible that it just came in a coincidental time to when you started making money and could tip. Because you had some momentum running.
Dude, I'll tell you one number one quality.
Doesn't hurt, though.
I'll tell you one quality that is I always have when I'm broke. You know what that fucking quality is? Selfishness. I always will look at the way I'm acting. It's always very fucking selfish. It's always survival mode, and I gotta look out for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a fucking verse in the... I always quote the fucking Bible. I am not a Christian, but there's a verse in the New Testament that had always perplexed me. It was something like, those who have will get more, and those who have not, more will be taken away. And the idea is, like, this sense of, like, this, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't go with the way we've been taught. It doesn't make sense that if you give out more than you have, you'll get more back. It doesn't...
Well, I don't know if it's more than you have. I think you just have to be generous.
Give more than you have. More than you have.
How can you give more than you have?
Easy.
You only have what you have.
Go to DuncanTrussell.com. My children, if you...
It's like saying, I'm going to try 100%, 10%. You can't.
I know, you're right.
I'm going to give 110%. No, you're not.
You know what it is, man? It's like the church had this idea. And the idea was tithing, right? And the idea was, give 10% of your income to the church, right? This is so because the church will deal with like giving the money out. Now, I think that this is based on a metaphysical principle. I think it's based on a metaphysical principle, which is that if you give out, like imagine, I think we may have talked about this before, but imagine if you cut out 10% of your income and just put it in a pile and made the decision that that 10%, you're going to just fucking give to people who need it. You're just going to give it to help people. You're going to use it to like help people. That's 10% of your income is going out into the world to help people. That would be the your favorite money. That fucking 10%. Like, on a Saturday, if you get to go into that account, you'd be like, fuck, man, I'm going to buy my friend an Xbox. Just because. Because that's coming out of the 10%.
That's a cool thing. That's a good idea, man.
Everybody thinks it's like, oh, I'm going to go give a ham sandwich to a heroin addict. No. Go fucking surprise your friend. Take him out to dinner. And then fucking buy dinner when they didn't expect it. Take one of your friends out who doesn't have a lot of money right now and, like, do something really cool for them when they don't expect it and don't act like they owe you. Just be like, no, dude, I just thought it would be fun. That's fun. That's tithing, if you ask me, instead of letting the church be in control of it.
Well, the problem, the church is always going to be like, who are they? This is just people, man. They're not really representing God. So if you got a good church, it could work out well. There's a lot of churches that do a lot of great stuff for the community. There's a lot of churches that keep people together. There's a lot of people out there, dude. They haven't thought too much about the world. They haven't thought too much about the complexities of the various different things that we do understand about the world. Subatomic particles interacting with each other across the universe at the exact same time. Communication through subatomic particles. Particles that are in both a superposition where they're in a state of both standing and moving at the same time. There's just too much craziness going on in the world. And there's not enough curiosity. And that combination of that and their culture and whatever the fuck their genetic imprint was, whatever, you know, whatever 9-volt battery that they were born with, all that combined, some people need religion, man. For some people, it's like a super beneficial tool. Sure. I don't deny it. Look, essentially what Christianity is supposed to be is supposed to be somewhat about being positive, about representing God, being living life by God's standards. Well, if you look at what God's standards are, sort of vaguely, and don't you take out of the stories about killing people that he tells you to kill, and what happens if you're a gay dude, and Jesus doesn't say any of that, but it's in the Bible. It's supposed to be, if the Bible's supposed to represent the word of God, if it is really...
Well, this is the shit talk that the fucking Loon Loon disciples say.
Right.
Like, you can't just follow what Christ said. You gotta follow everything in that old, sweet old book.
But ultimately, when it comes down to a church, though, it really depends on who's running the church. Like, the church could be a great asset to a community and a good place where people learn to be good people.
Oh, yeah.
Or it could be fucking craziness if you wind up in a church where, you know, the priests are fucking kids and the whole thing's chaos.
Dude,
and
I'll tell you know where I got a lot of info from, man? I got a big download from when I used to go to Agape Church with Reverend Michael Beckwith. I would fucking go there and that guy would blast positivity. You would go there and get, you would walk out of there feeling so fucking great, man.
What is his denomination?
I don't know the name of the denomination, but like they're into this book called The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes, which is like this idea that you create your own reality by the thoughts that you think. And it's that mixed in with all the world religions, mixed in with like, kind of like, I mean, listen, man, it's a big church and I'm not saying every moment of the ceremony wasn't slightly embarrassing. And I'm not saying that they're not people there dressed in like big baggy pants and wearing sandals and have really gone deep into fruit land. I'm not saying that that didn't happen, but that church, man, some of the information I got out of there, it was fucking really high-tech information. I'll tell you something else that happened to me there, and I'm sure I'm going to get fucking made fun of for this, but I'll tell you, man, I had a fucking terrible... I'd throw my fucking back out and couldn't move my fucking neck, and I was, like, fucked up and in a lot of pain, and I'm standing there... Oh, my God, there was a song you sing. They were singing this song, and this fucking guy behind me...
Started giving you a back rub and grabbing your shaft.
I knew it would come! Let me finish the story.
John Travolta,
let me finish
style.
The story before you attack. You gotta let me finish the story. Then lay into me. Here's the fucking story. Listen, I knew this was coming. I knew there was no way I could tell you this.
I'm a child.
This guy, I think it's funny. If this guy touches my back. And dude, Instantly, I felt fucking better. Instantly. Everything went away. My back felt better. Everything was...
Ladies and gentlemen, remember what I said yesterday about disinformation agents? Duncan clearly just exposed himself as a government agent. An agent of disinfo.
Shut up.
He says all this brilliant shit, and then he incorporates some back healing magic touches.
Listen, man,
this
I'm
motherfucker
sorry.
Is my doing friend, Christian healing.
Listen, I can only report from my own experience.
What about praying the gay away? Have you ever seen anybody successfully pray the gay away?
No.
Have you ever seen someone try?
No.
No. Okay.
I haven't seen anyone fucking pray the gay away, Joe. But it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing as a guy coming up and touching you and healing your back?
He didn't come up. He was standing there.
He was standing there. It's a magical touch. It healed your back.
Why would I bring this up in front
of you? Silly bitch. Why did you give me this?
I can't
leave this alone. This is ridiculous. So some guy came up and his
funny.
Desire to stick his penis inside your asshole was so strong that as he touched your back, the jolt just realigned your back because your back knew that it had to fight to survive.
Wait, so because Daryl...
You felt the love and lust of this man's fingertips?
Because Daryl healed me. You're saying
Daryl. Daryl have flannel underwear on?
He wasn't wearing underwear that day.
Whoa.
Look, I'm
just raw cock and zipper. I'm dangerous.
Listen,
raw
I know
cock
it's not
pressed up against the cold metal of the zipper.
I can't believe that you're turning healers and they've always been gay.
Ooh, let me just touch his back. The gay came out of his hand like a lightning bolt. He was like one of the Avengers. The gay came out of his hand into your back and just popped your back into order.
Listen, this is exactly what Jesus said.
It's like a baby.
I'll persecute you. I'm being persecuted. You know what? This is religious persecution.
Yes,
right
it
now.
Is. Absolutely. Absolutely. That guy prayed. He got out of it. He couldn't help himself. You were sexy. You were slightly slumped. Leaning to one side, looked like you had a hurt knee, maybe.
I'm trying to remember
perhaps
the song.
Even limping.
I'm trying to remember the song that we sang there, just so I could give you more.
You got to pray the gay way. Pray the gay way.
No way, I'll sing it. I'll sing it, dude. I'm going to give you more.
Okay.
More fucking ammo.
Okay.
I release and I let go. Let God's power something my life. I can't remember.
And they would just sing this over and over again? And everybody was really getting into it?
Yeah, and people would, like, go up and down the aisles with Kleenex because people would start crying. And, like, it was like... But, you know, I've learned to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so, like, a lot of the stuff, yeah, I don't know if I necessarily was, like, you know, fully on board. But I got some good information from there, man. There was, like, some really... the shit that he talked about was this concept of being able to, like... You decide when it's time to be happy. You decide to not be a victim. You decide to pull yourself out of the negative mire that you're in, and you can just do it. You don't have to come up with excuses. You don't have to go to the fucking mountains and meditate forever. You don't have to. You can just stop being a victim right away. And the moment you do that, your life will become a million times better, and everything else will follow from there. You know, you'll start treating people around you better. And when you start treating people around you better, you're going to get more prosperity. Because if you're treating people around you like shit, you're cutting off all these currents and circuits that...
Well, any interaction that you have with someone that ends up in a negative on their side or a negative on your side, you know, it's going to leave you with like a little bit of a deficit.
For sure.
You know, it's not a good feeling. It's not a good feeling when someone's upset at you.
No, it sucks.
Sucks.
It fucking sucks.
And you don't realize how much of an impact... Your words or your actions can really have until you see them upset someone, and then you realize, then it all manifests itself to you. It all shows, and you're like, God damn it, what the fuck was I thinking? I just got so flippant with, you know, being rude or being aggressive or being, you know, adamant or argumentative or whatever it is that causes these blips in the matrix. But sometimes you need to have those in your life just as a reminder. You know,
be careful. You know?
I'm not even saying that you should have to have them, but I see them in other people, and I learn.
Well, it's shit ping pong, man. You can get caught up in a long game of shit ping pong with people, and it's like, look, there's no way that you're gonna be perfect, and there's no way you're gonna avoid conflict, and there's no way you're gonna avoid getting angry. But the main thing is, man. Here's the main thing: forgiveness. And forgiveness it fucking isn't always fair. That's the thing about forgiveness, dude. It's not always fair. You're not. It's not always about who wins or who loses or who's right or who's wrong. Sometimes you just have to be like, look, man, we got fucking blasted out of a pussy. We're plunging towards oblivion. We're in this insane fucking dimension. You freaked out for a second. I freaked out. I forgive you. You win. If you, you know what I mean? Like, you just take that extra fucking step. And you know what that does? That stops the fucking... when you see, like... That stops the negative energy ball. That's the idea.
Right. Are you talking about anyone in specific?
Yeah. Yeah, man. You know, I already...
Yeah, you already did. Well, for people that know, Brian and Duncan had gotten into an argument. And, you know, it was unfortunate. It's unfortunate on both sides. It was unfortunate that Duncan brought it up in a public setting and sort of blindsided him. And I think you feel that, right?
I said it on the last podcast.
Yeah.
That I did. Here's the real thing I learned from it, though, man. This is the thing. You're not going to avoid conflict and... In a community. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I learned, is we have this little fucking
community. But do you, if you had a chance to do it all again, you wouldn't have done it that way?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you, you were a little snippy that day anyway, man. You even got snippy with me when I was fucking with you. And I was not being that aggressive, but you seemed like you were a bit testy that day.
Yeah, man, I was testy that day. And what happened was, without going into... I hate fucking resurrecting it again, because I think that it's like...
What made you testy that day?
I don't want to talk about that, man.
Okay, that's a personal issue.
It's a fucking personal issue.
But you certainly have.
It was a family issue, dude.
So you were a bit imbalanced.
Some shit had gone down, yeah. But anyway, there's no excuse. I don't fuck. Okay. Why was I testy? I was testy because I was not in control of my fucking self. That's right. Why anyone's testy. There's no excuse. Right. People always come up with excuses for acting like a fucking asshole.
Right.
It all boils down to, like, you...
Handling your own shit.
Yeah.
So, not imposing your own bullshit on other
exactly,
people.
Exactly, dude. Yeah. But so, What happened is during a podcast in Atlanta with Marshall Childs, the Laughing Skull,
mm-hmm.
I was starting to talk about those videos I made for South by Southwest, because I was trying to lead into talking about the Moon Tower Comedy Festival.
Right. And for people who don't know, Duncan has been pretty adamant about the, in my opinion, the very correct idea that if you're going to have a festival where you profit off of it and you have comedians perform at your festival, at the very least, you have to fly them there. I mean, if you want them to work for free, you can't really expect them to fly themselves there. And then when you find out the whole thing is sponsored by an airline, you're like, what?
Right.
Because they're going to profit by the fact that people have to fly in. Like, right. I mean, the whole thing is crazy. So you wrote this, you made this video where it was Hitler, and then over Hitler screaming, you had the translation, meme. The Hitler meme, yes. The translation was saying, you know, how preposterous it is.
Right. It was just the basic idea, which is that if you charge for, if you have an event centered around comedians, artists, whatever, that couldn't function without the comedians or artists, you have to fairly compensate them. You have to pay them a percentage of the door. It doesn't have to be a lot. Give them a little cut, whether it's a flight, hotel, I don't know, whatever the fuck it is. Right. But just, like, make it fair. So I was starting to talk about that. And then Brian got on the microphone and started talking about how, no, they pay the performers. Whereas, like, I have, you know...
He said it was up to the venues.
Well, no. What he was talking about was, as a comedian, you can get sponsorship from other people, like Brown Paper Tickets or other, like, corporations will pay for you to perform at their parties or will in some way fund you. But the festival itself doesn't pay.
So some venues don't pay the artists? No, some venues don't decide because they're at a certain place they get paid? Because I've heard that some people have gotten paid by Southwest. Who's getting paid?
I have. The guy, Charlie Sotelo, who runs South by Southwest, when I was at Moon Tower, we had the same fucking conversation.
Right.
And, you know, like, he was saying, you know, we don't fucking pay John. We didn't pay Johnny Cash.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? Like, we don't pay. Yeah, I know. What?
God,
you know, like,
so that's gangster.
He was saying we just, yeah, I know.
You need Johnny Cash to work for you for
free? It's fucking gangster. But, so that's the point. I already had this conversation with this guy about this. So I, at least from the perspective of the representative of South by Southwest on the comedy side, it told me directly this happened. And then also, as a Other note, he said, you know, yeah, we do give comics $100, but we don't even talk about it. So they pay comics $100. That's what I found out.
They don't talk about it.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said, this is not even something to bring up. Charlie Sotelo.
That's a big secret.
By the way,
Charlie. Something's wrong when there's a big secret where you're giving a comic $100.
Yeah, whatever. And Charlie Sotelo seemed like a really nice guy, and I kind of respect him for coming up to me and talking to me about it. I still completely disagree with him. Uh-huh. But he came up and he talked to me.
Because he had heard your video?
Yeah, he's the one who does the comics for South by Southwest. Right. So, like, it was really cool. He wasn't angry.
Uh-huh.
He just came up to me and broke it down in his own way from his own paradigm about how it fucking works. So, anyway.
And what was his justification for not paying?
You get a lot out of the festival as a performer. It's there's two paradigms. The two paradigms are people who pay based on a percentage from the door or some other form of, like, money compensation, and people who feel like they're offering a venue and they're offering the benefits that you get from performing on a show, whether it's working out or...
It's kind of amazing, the idea that, you know, you could have a festival of art and a profitable festival of art and say that the festival is more important than the art that's represented there. So the festival should profit, but the artists are getting the luxury of performing right at this pimp-ass gangster festival.
Look, man, a lot of
it's
people,
really amazing.
I like to play my own devil's advocate. South by Southwest is an expensive festival, and a lot of people like seeing bands, and some comics like seeing bands, and we're going to go to South by Southwest anyway, so now they don't have to pay the $700 that you would pay to see everything. So there's the justification of that perspective.
Have you been?
I've never been. But regardless, I feel...
When is it?
I don't know.
You know what we should do? We should just book the Cap City Comedy Club that week,
awesome,
if we can, if it's not already booked.
That'd
it's probably
incredible.
It's I bet it's already booked. I bet it's like something that like Doug Benson or someone tries to get like a year in advance.
That'd be really fun.
Yeah, because doesn't Doug do all that shit? He goes to all those places.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's always he's a wild bachelor character. He's out there slinging dick around the country.
That's what I hear.
Doing shows on 4:20 in the afternoon on Saturdays. He's doing what he wants now, man. It's really fascinating how he's got, you know, Doug's got this, you know, he's this thing where he can show up at like a regular club, like it has a full weekend, and he comes on at 4:20 in the afternoon, and he does these 4:20 shows where it's all his fans.
What about Side Boob Sunday? How'd that guy manufacture that? Where he gets chicks to send pictures of their side tits?
Who's this?
Who are you talking about?
Doug Benson does that?
Hell yeah.
He does?
On Twitter. It's the best.
Side Boob Sunday?
Look
oh,
it up.
I didn't see that.
People tweet like...
That's hilarious.
Beautiful hippie chicks tweet their, like, the profile.
Really?
It's great.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. It's really funny how you look on Twitter and some porn girls have, like, pick of the day. And you click on it. It's them with a giant f***ing dick in their mouth and one in their ass. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Really? Just pick of the day? That's it? No fucking warning at all? Like, you gotta go, okay, well, now I know how she's rocking it. Because some girls don't ever have that in their Twitter. Some strippers might as well be accountants. They might as well be working for Denny's. You know, they just have, like, you know, here's today, this is what I did, da-da-da-da-da. But some of those porn girls have, they'll just throw up some wild pictures. You gotta be NSFW. Got to be careful there, Doug.
NSFW. I love it when people get mad for posting that.
Not safe for work.
I'm going to put NSFW, man.
Well, that work thing. That's what we were talking about earlier.
Are we done with the Brian thing?
Well, I mean, sort of. I mean, we didn't even really go into it. What happened was you in this elevated, snippy state, I'll just cut to the chase. You called Brian out for something that you believe that he was doing incorrectly with how he was putting on a comedy show. And he defended himself and got very upset at you and couldn't believe that you said it on the air. And he was really hurt and stormed out of the room. And then, you know, we sort of sat around and talked about the importance of comedians getting paid and whether or not that was the right thing to do and what the real issue is. And, you know, it's there's a side to be had on both men's point of view, Brian's and yours. You know, there's a side to be had on Brian's about the way you presented it. You did it, like, and you were in this elevated state, and you were responding to him questioning
just to
you
sure
in
people,
the South by Southwest thing, and you attacked.
Some people don't know this, just to make sure people know.
Mm-hmm.
I told Marshall not to upload that
audio
right away.
Yeah,
like, right,
I know.
I have
that. You're not trying to make it more than it already is.
Right, I didn't want it to be more than that.
Okay. And Brian is very upset about it. And, you know, his side of it is that he did pay some people, and that there's a lot of expenses, and that he had to pay for taxes, and he's paying for the rent to keep that place open. And, you know, to be honest, he probably bit off more than he could chew, and he didn't realize how much was involved in not just putting on a podcast where you're just being the producer of the podcast, but also running a comedy show at the same time, calling people, booking it, having the comedians show up, putting together a flyer, trying to get people to come, tweeting it, making a big deal out of it. It's more involved. It's not like those guys that like do Comedy Juice or something like that. There's a lot of work involved in that. There's mailing lists, and there's, you know, I get their mailing lists all the time, and they're constantly emailing me all the time asking me to come and perform. Like, it's a business for these guys. They're trying to, you know, there's a lot of work behind it. I think it got away from him, and he's corrected it. And he's corrected it now, and because of this confrontation, the good that's come out of it is that the money situation has been taken completely out of his hands, so he doesn't have to worry about it anymore. Which is cool. And the shows can still pay for the rent there.
Yeah, here's what's not cool, and this is the thing it taught me. Because I've been seeing this in the positive, thankfully, in my life, mostly. But what happened was, even though it didn't get uploaded at the time, it could have. Marshall could have been like, fuck that, I'm not deleting that. That's good. That'll get traffic. That's good. Right. He could have been an asshole. I didn't know. I was totally wrong. Shouldn't have brought it up in a public way. I shouldn't have brought it up in a public way. I was totally fucking wrong. Even if I felt like Brian confronting me about South by Southwest was wrong, what I did was, so if Brian was throwing a negative energy ball my way, I grabbed that negative energy ball.
And tried to stuff it down his throat.
I expanded it and tried to stuff it down his throat out of anger. I didn't feel good. I was angry, right?
Right.
And so then Brian got mad. And then the energy ball, he exponentially increased the energy ball by having a blowout and saying, fuck Doug and Trussell over and over.
He doesn't do well when criticized anyway. But when criticized like that in a very confrontational manner on a podcast.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting for him.
Right.
But, you know, he didn't react. It was bad reactions on both sides. Neither one of you guys reacted admirably. You know, wanted to look back at yourself and how that whole thing went down, you know, were you going back and forth at each other? Were you, you know...
I didn't go... That's the thing, man. I went back at him once, and then I apologized on my podcast. And I guess I'm apologizing.
Yeah, but the initial words that you used were very confrontational.
In Atlanta.
Yes.
Yes. But then
how you launched it off was very. Used the words "ripping off."
No,
comedians.
I didn't say ripping off. I said robbing. Said robbing. Even worse, I said he's robbing comedians, and that's the fucking wrong word for not paying people.
When you go back and you listen to it, what do you get out of it? Have you listened to it?
No, I don't even want to fucking listen to it because it's anger, man.
Right.
It's just anger. I can only own my side of the street. My side of the street. When I attacked him, I was pissed.
You were pissed because you felt that he was incorrectly correcting you, and that he was putting his two cents in into an argument that you have that's a very big one. It's not just about South by Southwest, but it's about a lot of other organizations that don't pay the performance.
Exactly, and I think that the tides are shifting now, and I think that that paradigm where you charge money for a show and don't pay the comics is going to hopefully be gone permanently. Because what I really liked about the South by Southwest video and is that I think it encouraged some comedians to start speaking up. And I think artists are very afraid of confrontation and are afraid of speaking up about things that are obviously right.
Yeah.
Now, there's a time to speak up and there's a time to not speak up. And I think with Brian, when I said you're robbing comics, that wasn't coming out of some altruistic, you know, a state of wanting to like be Gandhi and help fucking comics. That was coming as like, oh, you slap me, I'm gonna slap you back.
Exactly.
And so that's wrong. That's wrong action. That's not skillful. That's bad. And so I went on my podcast and I apologized. I admitted that that was wrong. And also I think the term robbing is totally wrong because robbing implies that the person that you're it implies forcefully taking something for someone. Whereas if someone goes and does a show at the Ice House and Brian has said he's not paying or didn't mention payment, then you're entering into an agreement where you're going to perform for free. So it's more of the performer's deal. Like, it's you decided to go and do that. So robbing's the wrong word. So there's that. But watching it explode, you know what I mean? Watching the fireball grow bigger and bigger, it's been... a huge lesson for me, you know, and it really has taught me, like, fuck, man, you've got to learn to, if you're angry, and especially your anger is at a friend, and even though, like, I think Brian hates my guts permanently now, we've been friends for, like, I don't know, 7 years.
He likes to bring up shit that he did, like, 8 years ago, when he stabbed me with a pencil.
Stabbed him with a fucking pencil.
You did stab him with a pencil,
I'm sorry for that.
That's pretty fucking crazy.
You know what? I'm sorry that I did that. Let me tell you this. What? I'm a lot less sorry that I stabbed him with a pencil than I am that in a fucking public forum I called him out on something that I should have addressed privately. Because when I stabbed him with a fucking pencil, he kept poking my back on an airplane when I'm trying to sleep, man. And I had to fucking fight back. I don't feel bad about that. I was retarded, babyish, stupid. But that was just an instant reaction to being annoyed. What happened at the Laughing Skull was using a public forum to address a private issue. And I think that that is not fucking cool. And the end result of that, even though that podcast didn't get uploaded, is that we've created a fucking Kardashian episode with the Death Squad. And that sucks, man. There's a lot of fucking people who've been
taking both sides of it.
Taking sides and attacking me or attacking Brian or like all this stuff that ultimately... So now what happens, this is the fucking thing that happens, you watch this thing that started off as a mid-size negative energy ball turn into a big negative energy ball and then get fucking scattered and spread throughout the fucking internet with people siding up and trying to say hurtful things or right. Saying this person's right, that person's wrong, this is good, that's bad. This is why I say simplicity is the most important thing, man, because it's like ultimately you just have to say, I forgive you.
Simplicity is the most important thing?
Simplicity, man. Just forgiveness. Just at some point...
Simplicity is forgiveness?
No. Forgiving is a simple act. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be going into Judge Judy mode and
right.
Stretching out the events to see who was right and who was wrong and how right. Did you do that and why did you do that? It's just a simple thing of being like, look, let's stop playing shit ping pong with negative energy.
Yeah, but it's back to what we were talking about earlier about like money being needed to keep score. Even in fights with friends, there's someone has to be the one who was right. Someone has to be the one who was wrong. Someone has to be the one who won the argument. Someone has to lose. It's like when people break up and get divorced and yeah. You're like, oh, she won that one. You know,
it sucks.
She got out of that one pretty good. She gets this and that a month. And you know that poor fucking guy, he really lost that one.
It sucks.
It's funny. It's weird.
It's weird, man, and it's all ego-based.
It's all about our whole society. It's about achievement, forward progress, you know, treading into new territories and taking them over. I mean, it's whether it's those actual physical territories, like new lands, or whether it's technological territories, like new inventions and innovations. We're always moving forward, so like you have to like, okay, you're out of the relationship. How'd you do? I did great. Why? I only married that asshole for 3 years, and he has to give me $1 million. You know.
Look, man. I think I don't have anything else to say about that.
Right.
I think I'm done talking about that, but I do want to say
something. What he's upset about more than the fact that you brought it up on the podcast and did it like that and threw him under the bus, that even in your apology, you still said that he wasn't paying the comedians. And he did pay some of the comedians.
Right.
You know, and apparently, you know, I wasn't really... I told him it'd be a good idea to pay the comedians, but we never really had too many conversations about who got paid and who didn't. It was up to his discretion.
Right, okay, so... Okay.
So Little Esther, Tom Segura, some people got Bert Kreischer, some people got paid.
And some didn't.
You know, but there was different shows where there wasn't that many seats that were sold, you know, where he did his own shows. There were shows that weren't that successful.
Okay, right. Okay, so what this turns into at this point is like real fucking like to me it's like, I guess, so like if the apology is not correct, then basically what we've created now is a situation where it's like you didn't submit to me properly. You know what I mean? I know you played fucking Cat Stevens Peace Train and said that you were my friend. You know what I mean? Like I know that you did that, but you didn't do it in exactly the right way.
Mm.
And then if that happens, then it's like, okay, then well, you didn't do this and I didn't do, now all of a sudden shit ping pong's happening again.
Shit ping pong.
You know what I mean? And it's like, fuck, man. Like, isn't like the best thing to do to, like, number one, address this situation, and I'm addressing it publicly now because it was brought into the public forum. But isn't the best thing to do to address it privately? Isn't that the number one, like, best way to handle it? And number two...
Well, wait, it wasn't his fault that it was made public. It was really my fault. I was explaining to Ari why you guys were in an argument. And, you know, in the middle of a podcast, you're just talking. I didn't really stop and think whether or not this is a smart thing to re-expose.
Right, but...
But you must be upset about how it happened, and I know how I feel after every sort of yelling argument that I've ever been in my life.
It was like, no, it was really intense to, like, see someone saying, fuck Duncan Trussell in front of possibly half a million people. That felt really weird, because I, it's tough for me to imagine a situation where I would be angry enough to, like, try to publicly disparage somebody in that intense a way. You know what I mean? I don't think I'd do that. Unless I was really fucking pissed, so. Yeah, Peace Train!
We're gonna make it all work out, bro.
Well, that's what I
think. Bro, it's all gonna come together.
Peace Train, brother.
What a silly bitch. This Peace Train asshole became a Muslim.
Muslims are okay.
Oh, yeah, but he was calling for Salman Rushdie to be killed.
Okay, so he got off the peace train.
He's crazy.
He got off the peace train.
He was talking about how the Quran says that Salman Rushdie's gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. Didn't he recently, like, make a little comeback? Ran out of cash? Had a little bit of a comeback?
I saw him playing, but
he's Yusuf Islam now.
The attack on Salman, it's very sad.
Yeah.
That is a sweet song, man.
He's got a lot of great songs. Yeah. He's got some beautiful songs, really, man. Does. He's obviously an incredibly sensitive guy. But back to the whole situation. I think you have to treat your friends the way you treat someone that you love, like a wife. You know, you can't insult them. You can't lash out at them. You can't do it. It's a shitty thing when it happens, and you got to make it all better after it's over. And you got to really truly feel bad about it, and you got to really truly sort of correct yourself and make sure that you never put yourself into such a situation of almost like verbal combat with a brother, you know?
Yes.
Brian for sure has some maturing to do, and you know, and I think he's aware of it himself, and he started out at a different time than we did. He's a good dude, though, man. I've been with Brian for a long time. We've worked together for like a decade. He's a good dude, man. He's you know, he's got a lot of man child in him, but that's part of what makes him funny.
Yeah, man.
That's part of what makes him unique.
And P.S. Here's the fucking thing. No one needs to be attacking anybody. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Nobody.
There's no bad guys. There's no need for there to be an enemy involved here. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's like what we've got going on here with this, whatever you want to call it, the Death Squad, this podcast, our podcast is an emergent art form that's incredibly beautiful, and all of us are contributing to it in our own way. And a lot of people seem really invested in it, and a lot of people seem authentically upset by this fight. And so I think, like, out of respect for this, whatever this weird fucking thing is that we're building here, we've got to, like, learn how to forgive each other and to let bygones be bygones, because otherwise the community that we're forming is weak, mm-hmm. you know? And then in a weak fucking thing's going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you need blowouts like this. I would prefer for them to happen in private, but I think in this case it got into the public eye, fine. The fact that it is in the public eye creates even more of a reason to resolve it in a civilized way that doesn't mean somebody gets hurt or somebody gets fucking excommunicated or somebody gets, like, permanently mad. It means that, because if we can't figure it out, if we can't figure out how to resolve something as silly as this, then how can we fucking talk about stop dropping bombs? You know what I mean? How can we stop when that's what that is in the macro?
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's why I think it takes, at some point, if you look at the back and forth that happened in war, it's somebody did this to someone, and then they did something back, and then they did something back bigger, and they did something back bigger. It goes on forever. At some point, you just have to be like, I'm sorry. I forgive you. I'm sorry. And that's it.
And that's when Brian goes, fuck Duncan Trussell.
Right. Yeah, I know, man. That's the fucking... But you know what? It's like, you can only handle your side of the street.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's all that you could do. You can only handle your side of fucking things. That's all you can do. That's it.
Yeah, you know, I think all of us get caught up in life and stress and shit and this and that. And there's words that come out of your mouth that are poorly chosen. There's ideas that are expressed selfishly. You know, we all make mistakes, especially when you're fucking busy. You're not getting enough sleep, real stressed out, always in the middle of a million different things like I know you are and I certainly am. Sure. People make mistakes. People make a lot of fucking mistakes.
People make but mistakes.
You got to know when you've been friends with someone for a long time the essence of who that person is. You know, you gotta be a nice guy both when you are in charge and when you are the employee or the person who has to listen and follow directions, whether you're the fan or whether you're the performer, whether you're the police officer or the guy who has to talk to the cop because his car got stolen. You know, who the fuck, you know, we have to figure out a way to always communicate with respect. It's just so hard to develop a human being that's completely and totally honest, that we live in this world of maybes and half-truths and bullshit and lies, and then behind the lies there's things that are true but make no sense, like legislation and laws, and all of it adds up to be this really confusing, frustrating, unfair feeling of life in general, just as a pattern of your whole fucking situation. But all of it can be cured by the simple truth that we have to start treating each other as if we are treating ourselves, living another life.
Yeah.
If we are all this one thing that is born into this world in various circumstances and various biological situations and various states of the world and various climates, but at the soul of it all, behind the sex and behind the height and the weight and the essence of what a fucking human being is, it could just be as well, easily you. You could be that guy. You could be this guy. What you are, stripped of culture and language, and what I am, is the same thing. Yeah. I'm just going through this in a completely different ride with a totally different flesh vehicle, and we happen to see each other along the journey, and we become friends and united in our struggle together and enhanced each other. But at the end of the day, we're the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
And once we realize that I'm the same as some poor fuck that was born in Afghanistan and is living in a cave, I'm the same as that guy. I just got a way better roll of the dice and I was born in New Jersey. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the only way we're ever going to get over this hump of existence is if we drop all the bullshit and the one law that we should all recognize, the one thing that we should all practice, is the ideal that you are me and I am you, and we are living completely different lives, but inside the body, inside the being of what it is. When you think of you, I could easily be you. I could easily be my mother. I could easily be this asshole that lives down the street from me that I can't talk to because he's dumb. It could be this guy. I could be that guy. I could have been born here. It's just some crazy situation where we may all be the very same thing, living through different epochs, living through different biological identities, living through different genetics and different social circumstances. But at the root of it all, we could be the same fucking thing. And we essentially are.
Yeah, okay.
We essentially are.
For sure, man.
It's our own individual experiences that confuse the fuck out of us.
Yeah.
If we really started treating people like that, if you really looked at the world like that, and it doesn't always mean that you're going to give that person everything they want, because then you could spoil you.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can't be phony about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to address it from a real place. You can't be phony. But if you have as an intention in dealing with conflict, which everyone's going to have, wanting a resolution that
lessens... Wanting not just a resolution, but an evolution.
Yeah, that's it. If that's your fucking intention behind it, it's going to work out great.
Yes.
It's going to work out okay. It might be turbulent, it might be weird, but if that's your intention, then it's a lot different than the intention being, I'm going to win this!
Right.
I'm going to conquer! I'm going to be the one who comes out on top! That only creates more shit ping pong and more negativity in the world.
Right.
That's the thing that we've got to deal with. And this thing with Brian, and I'm sure everyone's got an example of this happening in their life or will have it. Deal with it in a way that's like accelerating the community, making the community stronger, making the community more.
Well, how about just the less karmic impact?
Yeah.
You know, that's outside of all that. I mean, get complicated and start really ultra defining everything as far as doing it for the community. But just do what feels like the healthiest thing to do. What's the healthiest thing to do? Drop all the problems. Drop all the bullshit. Just drop it.
It's done.
Drop it and learn from it and never be that guy again. You know, we have to accept that this is a trial and error sort of a situation in life, especially the generation that you and I come from. You know, you in your 30s, me in my 40s, we're essentially one of the first generations to be awake. We're one of the first generations to use the internet and to sort of exchange so much information back and forth with each other that we're kind of reformulating our idea of how the world works. You know, I mean, we don't really necessarily trust our parents that brought us into this thing. We don't necessarily trust our parents' parents to have a full sort of an account of what really is going on in this life, biologically, physically, geopolitically. We are one of the first generations to truly have a decent grasp of it because of our use of the internet. So we're a lot of what we're doing as adults is essentially trying to re-govern our own culture, to re-figure out how we're communicating with each other. If the New York Giants fans really want to beat the fuck out of the Raiders and they don't even know them, isn't there something wrong with that?
Right.
Like, could that not be us on another side of the country?
Right.
I mean, do you not understand that? You really want to go and, you know, you go to a fucking ball game in Philly and they break your leg in the hallway because you're wearing the wrong shirt? Like, that stuff happens.
Yeah.
That's you, man. That's you on the ground living a different life and you just stomped on your thigh bone and snapped it. You know, and that's a really unfortunate aspect of life, this sort of a tribal thing that, you know, might have existed in that book, The Road, in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, and then what could happen if the shit hits the fan? But what we have to understand is the shit's not hitting the fan right now.
Yeah.
It's not hitting the fan at all. This is nothing like the shit hits the fan.
Great right
now. There's a guy that I was mentioning earlier that was talking about how life right now, that we're unhappy, but yet we live very much like kings and emperors, you know, did 100 years ago, which I thought was really stupid because, first of all, the idea of we don't live anything like an emperor. You don't have a harem. You can't order them around. You can't have people killed if they talk shit. You don't have people carrying you around on a giant tray everywhere you go.
Also, you're not eating rancid fucking meat.
Yeah.
You're not, got a fridge.
Yeah, you're not dying from whooping cough because nobody knows what the fuck it is and they think you got possessed by a demon.
That was always the thing. It's
yeah.
a demon.
Yeah, those silly fucks.
Dude, can I tell you about something? I don't know how long I've been doing this, but please, can you look something up, dude?
Yeah, sure.
Augmented reality sandbox.
Augmented reality sandbox.
Look up this fucking thing, man.
What is
Speaking of living in the best, it's an Xbox Kinect set up over a sandbox with a projector blasting flowing water into it. So as you like move your finger through the sandbox, like water flows around and like grass forms. It's like the future of video games, man, especially with this new quantum sand that apparently computers can, like, construct into shapes that they're talking about. Did you find it?
Whoa.
Yeah, dude.
What the fuck is this, man?
It's fucking badass.
So explain it one more time, please.
It is an Xbox Kinect that's somehow detecting changes in the terrain of the sandbox and projecting water and grass and sand over different parts of it, I think based on how high or how low the sand is. So if you like go really, like if you hold your hand over it, it makes water appear running through the sandbox, and if you run your fingers through it, I think water appears as though there's like water under the sand, like at the beach.
You know when my fucking computer runs slow as shit?
Probably when you're streaming a podcast.
Yeah, when I'm streaming a podcast. What's that about?
Well, it's because I guess there's only a certain amount of bandwidth.
That's weak. Is it really that hard to make a podcast, folks?
I know.
But every time I try to go online, it's just slug-like. I'm sorry. So I was looking that up. Augmented reality. I'm trying to pull up the YouTube video.
It's just but so it's, fucking
it's really
cool,
slow
man.
Here.
It's so cool. It's just...
Okay, now I'm looking at it. Wow. And so how does it work?
And the Xbox Kinect, I think... identifies distances. I don't know how it works. People hack.
So you're drawing in the sandbox.
Yeah.
And then as you scoop up sand in the sandbox, it's showing on a projection screen?
It's projecting directly onto the sand.
Wow.
From above.
Yeah. It's projecting changes in colors, and it looks very psychedelic.
It's super psychedelic.
You could trip a kid out. Make a kid make sandcastles and that shit. Trip them out.
Fuck the kid, man.
It's next level. Next level sandcastles.
Wait till they project StarCraft on that fucking thing.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun. I'm gone. When that
speaking of StarCraft, rather, every day in my life is just like downtime till Prometheus comes out. I'm just like, what? I would like to clone Ridley Scott and give him an infinite budget and just give him all the acid and mushrooms he needs, and him and H.R. Geiger, and just lock him in a room together and just make a million alien movies.
Dude, I've been thinking about, I swear to God, I've been thinking about inducing a coma just to wake up and be able to go to Prometheus. I can't fucking wait. That movie looks so awesome, dude.
I know, it's so dorkalicious.
Yeah, I can't wait.
It's like I was saying about my lust to go see the Avengers. I feel like I'm getting away with something. Yeah. I really do. I'm going to bring the Mustang, too. The stupidest fucking kid car that I had. It's fucking... I have a Shelby GT500. It's this really loud, super American car. It's so American, man. Everything about it. They don't make another car like that. No one in the rest of the world makes a car like a Shelby Mustang. Slides all over the place. It's really... It handles pretty well, considering.
I went and test drove cars yesterday, man. They're so fucking nice after you've been driving around an 89 Volvo.
I love cars. These cars are the one my number one technological thrill, like the thing that I enjoy the most. I just love the craftsmanship. I love how someone's created something. I love the different philosophies behind cars, like the high-revving cars of Germany, or like the deep, low-torque muscle cars of America. I think they're fascinating to me. They're moving works of art that they sell. You know, like if you buy a new Corvette, like there's a lot of people that think Corvettes are douchey because a lot of douchebags drive Corvettes. But Corvettes are fucking amazing. It's an amazing piece of construction and engineering.
Dude, but isn't that a funny thing where like because people think they're supposed to think it's not cool?
Yeah. An object can get a douchebaggish reputation, yeah. And thus if you're with that object.
Sorry.
What is that?
My fucking phone, sorry.
You have a horn? Ridiculous motherfucker, you.
What's it's a forest horn.
Oh, okay. Turn that shit on mute, son.
I don't know how.
There's a little thing on the side of it.
I won't turn down all the way.
It goes to vibrate, stupid. The thing on the side. Up above, where your fingers are. Where your fuck finger is. See that?
I have a fuck finger.
That finger right there, man. Jesus Christ, are you retarded? There's a little lever on the top of the side of your phone.
Of the
side. You see that? Yeah, that shuts it to vibrate, you fuck.
Oh, that changed my life!
Oh, you are so this retarded. All the shit. How do you not know how to fucking turn your vibrator on?
Seriously, man, at night, that fucking horn's been waking me up.
Oh my God, you idiot.
Dude, that fucking horn.
Oh my God, you idiot. You didn't know that?
No.
How the fuck do you have an iPhone and not know where the vibrate button is? Duncan, you make me sad.
Sorry, man. You fucking just changed my life, man. That fucking thing's bothering me nonstop.
Dude, I've been looking at some of these Android phones they have now. I know I get like lusty envy with certain phones, but one of them I've been looking at is this Galaxy Note. I've been watching videos, and one of the things that everybody keeps saying is once you get this thing, it's really hard to go back to a regular phone because it's 5 inches wide, and it's 4G. It's wicked fast. It's a crazy fast processor, and I'm watching these people use it and play with it online and take pictures with it and draw on the picture. Like, you write, like, I'm the stupid, and you can send it in an email or send it in a text message, and browsing the internet, I mean, it's fucking huge. That's man. Cool. It's 5 inches.
Yeah, man, I feel like the little screen on the iPhone,
it's not enough.
I think it gives you eye strain.
It's like, bad.
I think it fucks up your eyes.
This thing is better. This fucking thing is better. I may switch from the iPhone to this Note.
I'll never switch from the iPhone.
No. You say that, man, but these new ice cream sandwich Google phones are pretty fucking complicated, man. They're really badass.
Never taking that risk again.
Really?
They can kiss my ass.
Whoa.
I had a fucking...
Look at you.
I had aggressive. An Android for so long. It ruined.
They're not like those old Androids, though. I picked up a shit Android once. I had a shit Android for one day, and I was like, this is a drunk, retarded iPhone. That's it was right. really bad.
That's right. This is perfect.
But these aren't like that. These new ones are not like that. This new operating system is called Ice Cream Sandwich, and apparently it's the shit. And the new Samsung Galaxy 3, that's another one that just came out in England. I don't think it's out in America yet. That's another huge one. It's like 4.8-inch screen, enormous screen. Not quite as big as the Note. The Note is like 5+, I think 5.3. But it's a huge screen, and like when you touch the outside of it, it ripples like water. It's like it's cool. Got the effect that there's water on it.
That's fucking cool.
When you rub your hand across it, it takes a snapshot of the screen. Like that's all you have to do. That's it's like cool. You're a magician. You do that.
They're badass, man.
Yeah, which is going to lead to a lot of accidental screenshots. People are going to be fucking drop their phone on the ground, and it looks like it's a swipe, but really it's just passing by a dick.
Ugh.
And you're going to take pictures of ball sacks and all kinds of unexpected shit. All kinds of, what's the word you're looking for? Candid shots.
Candid adult shots.
Random vagina shots. Whoa.
Adult.
What happened?
This is an adult film.
It's a screenshot.
Yeah, there's a lot of
the camera's view.
Dude, you know what I'm afraid of, man? I'm afraid that, like, here's what's going to happen. This is what I think is going to happen to me when I get conspiratorial and worry about the crazy shit we talk about on here.
Uh-oh.
I think one day the feds are going to come. They're going to take me. They're going to do the old Bill Hicks thing where they take you into a room. But instead of showing a video of an assassination, they're going to show a screen filled with MOVs of me jerking off in front of a fucking Mac.
In front of your camera.
Cameras right there. And next to it, the different things I was jerking off to. And they're going to show me that and be like, hey, man, you want to keep saying the hippie shit? You want to keep talking about that? Because look.
Want to keep talking, hippie boy?
Hey, what's this? Is this German piss porn, Duncan, that you are looking at?
Is it possible to convert the entire government into a positive force? Is it possible to have people that are really looking out to do the right thing and get it all together? Or is the job of working for the government so fucking unrewarding and boring that everyone just falls into a place of non-innovation, non-responsibility thinking, the diffusion of responsibility that comes with the corporation also falls upon you when you're in government? It's just, it seems so futile, it seems so huge, it seems so impassable that you just sort of give up and become a part of the wave.
Dude, I think right now, I don't know how you fix it. So, like, all I can think about is, like, in the micro, you fix it. And if the majority of people start improving their lives and the lives of people around them and actively seeking to put positive energy out in the world, then maybe that'll sort of transform the government itself in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as people are getting caught up worrying about the macro and thinking that everything's coming to a screeching halt and everything's fucked up and they might as well just live like idiots and give up trying to be happy, then shit will continue to perpetuate itself in a negative way. So I think the idea is it's like, yeah, things are fucked up. The world, Nancy Grace's world, is a shitty fucking world. But let's not worry about Lynn Lanise Lanou got strangled in the Everglades. And let's start worrying about the way that we're treating our fucking wife or our friends or our kids or whatever and deal with that. And then if enough people started doing that, I think a big change would happen in the world, man.
You can definitely change. Look, everybody can change. And everybody can change their own environment by surrounding yourself with other people that are like-minded. That is possible. And that's one of the things that I think that this podcast does. We've talked about this before, but it's important to recognize that we're aware of this, that this is not something that existed when we were young. We didn't have access to people that were just for sort of with no real... no obligation. There's no real direction that we're trying to go with this. We are just trying to express ourselves 100% honestly.
Yes.
There's no ulterior motive.
No agenda.
There's no deception. It's just this is how we really view the world.
Right.
And when you're stuck somewhere and you don't have people like that around you, this is the only way you can get that. And through this, it allows people to connect, like-minded people to connect through Twitter and through Facebook and whatever, and they seek each other out and all improve the actual environment they live in, and then it starts these exponential changes all over the world. That's the only way, in my opinion, we're ever going to change any government anyway, is expose them to new ideas that are more satisfying than the stupid, dumb conqueror model that they've been using since before the days of Genghis Khan.
That's it, man, and we got to figure that out. We have to figure out what that looks like.
Well, that looks like the internet. That's what it looks
like.
It's like
Reddit.
The internet is the only thing that the internet is the only thing that doesn't want to hear your bullshit. You know, there's isolated pockets there's isolated, you know, places where you can go, like Stormfront websites, and where you can just go hang out with only Nazis, and you know, they'll, you know what I mean? I mean, there are a lot of those out there. You could just do that, but the overwhelming social network interaction, the overwhelming experience seems to be the distribution of information. You know,
that's it.
Good and bad. You know, good and bad. But the distribution of information, the exposure of reality.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. And it's like, definitely, if you look back at history and the way power's always fought to subvert the flow of information, and suddenly there's a thing that is like a truth volcano, yeah. And there's no way to put a fucking cork on it.
No, dude, if we had this, if this was a radio show, and we were in 1960, and this was a pirate radio show, they'd put us in jail.
Oh, yeah.
They would come after us and put us in jail.
There's
a giant difference between the world of post-1993, which is really sort of the one of the first years of the internet being like a public entity that I can remember. And maybe it happened a few years before that for the real hardcore guys, like the real hardcore geeks. But for me, 1993 is about what I... And that's a different fucking era. They might as well have been... I mean, before that, there was no cell phones either. All that happened at the same time as well. You know, essentially, in a few years post, you know, it all kind of bubbled together into one big sort of a communicative soup.
Yeah, man, it's incredible. And it's also incredible how positive it can be.
Can be, yeah.
Yeah,
this.
Yeah, how
this.
Yeah.
With this, more positive for us, you know, for sure. More positive at the shows, more people enjoying themselves. I mean, we're having shows that we've never had before. So the kind of shows we're having where we're going, thousands of people are there, and the thousands of people are screaming and having fun, and this is just massive bursts of positive energy. Well, that massive burst of positive energy all came out of doing something like this, doing this podcast, connecting with all those people out there, filling their head with something to think about while they're working, while they're doing mundane tasks, while they're commuting, all of it for free, all of it without an agenda, and all of that, we see what it does. It spreads out more positivity, and it makes you want to write more shit, and it makes you want to perform more comedy and have more material for them and do more shows.
And it fucking rocks your consciousness when the freaks contact you and say, "Hey, listen, I'm a Thelemite. I'm a disciple of Crowley. Hey, why don't you check out this book 4? And then you order. All right, I'll fucking get book 4. And then you're reading Crowley, and suddenly you're like, "Holy fucking shit! This is some intense shit here. Some of this is right on and real." Or that guy Matt Staggs from Disinfo. I love you. He sent me all these fucking books. I've been reading these books and getting stoned and reading these books and just start shuddering and stoner. Like, are you fucking kidding? The Catholic Church? All this shit I'm upset over the Catholic Church is all coming from this one fucking book that he sent to me. And that's the other cool thing is that...
Just get, if you don't know about Disinfo, just go out and get You Are Being Lied To.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
They're amazing.
It's amazing. Anybody says there's no conspiracies is a fucking idiot. Because, like as we were talking about with 9/11, there had to be a conspiracy on the enemy side. So there are conspiracies in human nature, and they do pull things off. And if you don't think they have in the past, you're being silly.
That's
you're
silly.
Being incredibly silly.
Fucking silly.
That's how it runs.
Yeah, but there's obviously conspiracies. There needs to be conspiracies. How about every time you fucking... I mean, yeah, there's many conspiracies and huge conspiracies. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's what the whole point is, what we have going on here is not a one-sided thing. We've got a conversation happening with these people where they... Anytime...
We're connecting with people.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so cool to do those things we do after the show. We go out and take pictures of people for fucking hours.
Greatest.
For hours. We just go wade out into the crowd and take pictures.
So
and,
fun. That's where and the
people. Yeah, and these people are overwhelmingly cool. Overwhelmingly cool.
I 99.9%.
99999. Yeah. And even the ones that aren't cool are just fucking probably just freaking out.
The ones who aren't cool are just a little too drunk, I've noticed.
There's a little bit of that, yeah. Fucking poor drunks.
Wow.
Sad bitches.
Drug.
Yeah. But it's other than that, it's been overwhelmingly positive. And that all came from this one thing. You know, it all came from this one idea, this desire to express yourself and express information, discuss things, and to force ourselves to have these conversations on a regular basis. And Duncan and I, we started having these conversations when he was working at the Comedy Store. And
exactly,
very similar. That's how we became friends. Duncan was the guy who you'd call in. You'd say, "Hey, man, I'm going to be in town Friday and Saturday. Throw me up." And Duncan would, you know, he would write down the lineups and give them to Mitzi, and Mitzi would decide, like, where to put everybody. So Duncan, you know, I'd call him up, hey, man, I'm going to be in town Friday. What's going on? Like, dude, I just read this book, okay? And we would go into these crazy fucking rabbit hole conversations, because sometimes the phone wouldn't ring at the Comedy Store for an hour, you know? So you and I would just keep talking. We would just have long-ass crazy conversations about all kinds of weird shit.
Yeah, man, but you know, like, you pretty much gave me, like, my big break, because you started taking me out on the road with you when I sucked.
Well, you always had potential. Yeah. You know, it wasn't
but
that...
you saw that.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot. Because, like having, like, you be like, hey, man, like, I can remember... I'll never forget this shit, man. I can remember being in the OR and doing this joke. I don't even do it anymore. But it was like... being in a bad relationship is like having an octopus stuck to your face that every once in a while whispers to you, do you still love me? This is some dumb joke. But I remember, like, you saw that, and after it, you were like, that was fucking funny, man. And I was like, whoa, holy shit, man. Rogan thinks that joke's funny. That was a big moment, man. You really do help, like, a lot of young comics, man. You help a lot of fucking... you, like, really have, like, a sort of... patron thing happening with people.
Well, that's nice if that's true. I love comedy, man. It's still my favorite thing to watch as an audience member. You know, I think it's the greatest art form there is. As far as me, you know, like what it entertains me, I just love watching a good comic more than anything. So I love, like, helping. I love watching guys become killers. I remember watching Ari Shaffir go from being a guy who was, like, kind of a little bit uncomfortable on stage, trying to find his feet, to one day, you know, just slowly but surely becoming a killer. And now I just watch, I've seen Ari crush in front of thousands of people. Sure. And I remember taking him on the road with me. I remember I took him to Denver. I was taking Mike Young. Mike Young couldn't make it for some reason.
Yeah.
So I took Ari, and Ari just fucking lit the place on fire. And I was like, God damn, look at Ari Shaffir. All of a sudden, he's a real comedian. It's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch your friends grow and prosper and become real comedians.
You would fucking encourage me to do the puppet act in fucking crowds that it could never work. You would be like, just do it. No, just
fuck them, man. Just do it. That's your bit.
It was awesome.
It's brilliant.
But a lot of comics who are bringing people on the road with them would not recommend before their sets, be like, hey, dude, do that fucking really uncomfortable satanic puppet act, right? So that I come out, because I want to see what it's like to come out to a horrified crowd. Not just a crowd that's like seeing someone bomb, but a crowd that's like maybe seeing like either someone who's a schizophrenic or like a satanic ritual.
Well, you know, I mean, I had this conversation with Ari once on the road. We were talking about trying out new stuff and bombing, or, you know, or what have you. You know, like the willingness to take chances, and then sometimes it doesn't work out. And he said, yeah, but sometimes, you know, you go on the road and you don't want to take those chances. I said, well, you don't have to worry about that because you're open enough for me.
Right.
So, like, it doesn't matter if you bomb.
Oh, yeah. You're
never going to get fired.
Yeah.
I know that you're a funny comedian.
Yeah, that's like, cool.
As long as you're trying to be... When I wouldn't have that feeling is when someone wasn't trying to get better.
Right.
You know, there are people that just get to a certain point and they just completely plateau and then they redo the same jokes for a decade. I mean, we all know comics that are like that. I have no desire to be around those type of people. But the type of guys like you or like Ari or anybody who is improving and always working on your stand-up, I was like, go fuck around up there, man. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's all about developing.
Oh, dude, but you don't necessarily tiptoe around the fact when some of our jokes don't work out.
Got to be honest about that. But I want you to be honest to me, too.
I am.
I mean, Eddie Bravo said to me once, he goes, man, I don't like that joke you're doing. And I said, yeah, I'm kind of forcing it, right? I'm like, yeah, thank you for telling me that. Thank you, because I'm fucking forcing that joke. That was a joke that I had, like, kept in my arsenal that I had committed to for whatever reason. It just wasn't good.
No, that kind of shit helps, man. That's it.
Fuck yeah, man. You need to know. You need to know when you're being repetitive. You need to know when you overuse the word fuck and you make for an uncomfortable moment when someone's listening to you. You're doing when you're on stage is you're essentially controlling the pattern of thought that goes through someone's mind, because you're going to bring up various topics and various subjects that put various images and feelings in people, and you have to get them to appreciate where your mind is coming from. Well, if you're adding in a bunch of extra fucks, or you're stammering, or you're coming off like a goof, which oftentimes we do, especially on this podcast when we got too high. Like, I couldn't remember the Young Turk thing earlier.
That's okay.
So we go into stammer mode, you know. But no one wants to listen to that and then allow you to continue controlling the pattern of thought.
Right.
That's why it's an uncomfortable moment. That uncomfortable moment is the realization that you, at that moment, you shouldn't be in control. And unfortunately, you are, because there's only two people in the room. And regardless of the fact that 500,000 people are going to listen to this, there's only two people in the room.
Two people. Sometimes I've gone on stage and fucking forgotten what's about to come out of my mouth. That's the worst thing, where you're like in the middle of something. And that's happened to me a couple of times where I'm like too high and I'm like, shit. Did I do this joke?
Am you gotta I be careful. It? Well, yeah. You know what sucks? When you do more than one show in a night.
Yeah, and then you get really confused.
Well, because when you do more than one show, what happens is there's a state of mind when you're on stage, which is like, let's just consider it getting on the trolley and sitting in the same seat. Okay, you get on the trolley, you're in that same seat. That is the state of mind that you're at when you're on stage. Like, yeah. I'm in this driver's seat, and here we go, I'm on the trolley.
Yeah.
Well, when you're on the trolley again for the second show, and especially if you do it like I do it, where I don't really have necessarily a particular order, I think I have an idea probably how I'm going to close, but I don't know how the fuck I'm going to open, and I might go from here to there, and I might jump all over the place. And when I do that, then I can get lost and say, I don't remember if I did this one already.
Dude, it's it's really easy to lose your focus up there, but thank God it doesn't happen all the time. You know, I just realized this two-man thing a problem. I gotta fucking piss, dude.
What do we do? Go piss. Let's wrap this up. Okay. We've been talking for 2 hours.
Should we wrap it up now?
In 50 minutes. Yeah, let's wrap it up now. So I think to wrap up the Brian thing, you know, I think we all learned a little something from this. And I think, yeah, online feuds and just spats and all that stuff is just bitch shit.
Yeah, let's forget it. Water under the bridge.
It's gross.
Done.
See you later.
Bye.
You're going to have a city of levitation to lift yourself
right under the bridge.
Above this life. We need to get you back in the isolation tank, dude.
I got to get in there. Can I plug something?
Plug the fuck out of it, son.
We're doing pre-sales for the first time ever in my life as a comedian.
Oh, my goodness.
I've started selling t-shirts. We're doing pre-sales for t-shirts at the shop at DougAtrussell.com. They're awesome. One of them is a pyramid killing a fucking vampire.
I've seen it. It's pretty dope. If they order pre-sale, how long is it before the shirt will actually ship?
We're going to put the order in on the 15th.
So then how long will it be till they actually get it?
It's on the site. I think it'll be a couple of weeks.
You can handle a couple of weeks, folks. Give us something to look forward to.
If you get them now, it's $20. And if you wait, it's a $2 extra. And you can't.
Whoa, that's dunking you crazy. You're a marketing genius. I like how you do. You give them a penalty.
My web guy, Steve, came up with that.
That guy sounds like a creep.
No, he's an awesome guy. No, he isn't. He's that guy in the woods.
Gimmicky motherfucker.
Yeah, he's great.
Just kidding. I can't help myself.
I love you, Steve. You're the greatest ever.
Steve, I don't even know you, and I love you, but you are me, and I'm you. We already established that. Holla! We'll be doing more podcasts this week. I'm not sure who. I'm working out the next couple ones this week, but more Red Band as well. Don't worry. We'll bring my little buddy back into the mix. And so I want to thank everybody that came to New York this past weekend. We had the fucking time of our lives.
That was a blast.
I mean, you can't get better than that. I played it yesterday. I played the audio of Joey Diaz going on stage.
People didn't hear it.
Oh my God, it was insane.
I'll pull it up again just because it's so ridiculous.
I gotta go piss.
It doesn't. Go ahead. When you go piss, I'll play this. Because I played it for Mrs. Rogan and she almost didn't believe it. It doesn't. So it really doesn't seem real. This is Joey Coco Diaz going on stage in New York. He hasn't even had a chance to say a word yet. He had to stop them. It was just crazy. It was, it really represents to all of us some sort of a real obvious paradigm shift. And, you know, I can speak for every one of us, for Joey, for Ari, for Duncan. You know, we're very, very thankful that all this is happening. And for me personally, as a guy who, you know, I was the one who was on television and I was the one who was taking these guys on the road with me, to see guys like Joey all of a sudden become recognized and people appreciate him for what he is. Joey has always had a hard time with people recognizing his brilliance because he's so crazy and out there and wild with his comedy that until he was famous, until he was like an established personality like he is now, it's almost like it's too hot to handle. It was too much to deal with. Nobody wanted to have him middle. That was like a big deal with Joey Diaz. Like, he couldn't get work on the road because he couldn't headline, but he couldn't middle because nobody wanted Joey Diaz on in front of them because he would just go up and fucking destroy. But my philosophy of comedy came out of the Comedy Store. And first of all, what that meant was that we were all brothers in the Comedy Store. So it was like, if I was going to take anybody on the road with me, I'd take my Comedy Store brothers. It was always Ari Shaffir. It was always Duncan Trussell. It was, different people, Sam Tripoli, different people that are Comedy Store brothers. And Joey was always a Comedy Store brother. And so when I started taking him on the road with me, there was two reasons. One, that because he was a Comedy Store brother. And two, because the philosophy of the Comedy Store also was you wanted to go on with a bunch of other killers. You didn't want to be the only guy that was good. You wanted a Comedy Store was about a bunch of different guys being good. Like the old Outlaws of Comedy, you know, with Carl LeBeau and Kinison. Like, there was a bunch of guys that were really good. Ron Chalk, there was a bunch of these dudes that were really good together.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so taking guys like Joey on the road and exposing him to all these people, and then seeing him go on stage and these fucking gigantic rounds of applause he gets, it's beautiful. I couldn't be happier. It's amazing. To me, it's like a vision that's sort of coming true. We had this idea when we used to do these, you know, when we were calling ourselves a Death Squad, we used to do these little videos. I hired Brian to do these Death Squad videos. And some of them were really short. Like, one of them was Joey Diaz talking about mugging this gay guy, and the gay guy beat him up. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I'll probably get Brian to try to find them all and organize them and put them online, because some of them were really classic. But the idea didn't really come to fruition in the terms of doing it through these little video clips. The real way to get to know a guy like Joey is to get to know him on the podcast, to hear him go off for hours and hours about criminal stories, about sneaking into some girl's fucking bedroom at 2 o'clock in the morning and eating her pussy and then escaping, and like just the crazy shit that he did. You know, the Lucy Snorbush story has become so big that a guy in Atlanta, did you see the stickers that he made?
Yep.
He had "Hello, my name is Lucy Snorbush" t-shirt to stickers.
Fucking awesome.
They're amazing, man. It's just to see that happening and to see it all come out of this one idea that, you know, that man, I got this really talented group of friends, and I think that if we all stick together and sort of, you know, help each other out and pump each other up, we make each other better, and we make each other funnier, and we create like a bigger footprint of positive energy. All of us together have one giant footprint of positive energy. But it has to be only that. And that's why it was very important to resolve this whole issue with you and Brian. And, you know, as I said, it's not a clear-cut case of either one person having done the right thing. And there's errors made on both sides, both in the actual act itself and in the discussion of the act afterwards. There's some incorrect thinking and there's some negative thinking going on, but hopefully we'll work all that shit out. The most important thing is we're all of us in this fucking thing together, and the less negative bullshit that you can spread, the more forgiveness that you can give, the more you can call people up and go, "I'm fucking sorry, I'm really sorry," and the more the person listening can go, "It's all right, dude, it's all good, dude." The more we can do that in this life, the more we realize that we're all capable in various situations and in various circumstances of making colossal mistakes. It doesn't necessarily mean you're a horrible person. It just means sometimes we don't respond well to stress. Sometimes we don't respond well to character issues, and we need to learn and we need to grow. And you may be more perfect than I am. You may be further ahead, but show me how you got there. Don't chastise. Don't be angry and don't hate. Try to elevate. We can all make this. We're not going to make utopia. It doesn't exist. But we can all make our environment and the people we come in contact with a little bit better.
Amen.
My recording will stop in 3 minutes. I just got a warning from Ustream. Listen, power to the people. I love all you dirty bitches. We do. And we'll be back soon. Thanks to the Fleshlight. Go to joerogan.net. Click on the link for the Fleshlight. Enter in the code Dave Rogan, and you will save yourself some money. And thank you to onnit.com. That's O-N-N-I-T. Enter in the code name Rogan, and you will get 10% off any and all orders. Thank you for everybody.
Thank you, baby.
Thank you for everybody for tuning in. It sounds like I'm selling my Brazilian translation. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we love the fuck out of you.
Love you. Bye.